Come, violent death. Serve for Mandragora to make me sleep. Go tell my brothers when I'm laid out. They then may feed in quiet.
Where's the waiting woman? Fetch her.
Oh, you are damned perpetually for this. My turn is next. Is not so ordered?
Yes, and I'm glad you are so well prepared for it.
You are deceived, sir. I am not prepared for it. I will not die.
Come, dispatch her.
I will not die. I must not.
Delays. Throttle her.
If you kill me now, I am damned. I am quick with child.
Why, then, your credit's saved.
Is she dead?
She's what you'd have her.
The Skull Beneath the Skin by P.D. James. Dramatized by Neville Teller. With Greta Scacchi as Cordelia Gray. John Moffat as Ambrose. Norman Rodway as Whittingham. Carolyn Blakiston as Clarissa. Richard Vernon as General Ralston. And Patricia Garwood as Roma. The Skull Beneath the Skin, Part 1.
I measured it carefully from the ground. Honestly, Miss Gray.
I know you did, Bevis. It's the pavement. It must be uneven, that's what it is. Oh, we should have bought a spirit level. My fault.
That nameplate, isn't it rather crooked?
Yes, it is, I know.
Tompkins? That blessed kitten's off again. Excuse me, Miss Gray, I'd better catch him.
Why not get the job done properly? Here's a chap to go to. Give him a ring. Say I sent you. That's me on the front.
Oh, you're very kind. Sir George Ralston, Bart, DSO, MC. Tell me, are you a connoisseur of nameplates or just a public benefactor?
Actually, I'm a client. If that is your Cordelia Gray, are you?
Yes, I am.
Then why do you call yourself Pride's Detective Agency?
Because, Sir George, we were set up by an ex-metropolitan policeman called Bernie Pride.
I see.
I worked for him for a time, and then he made me his partner. When he died, he left me the agency.
In that case, shall we go in? After you.
You'll have some tea, Sir George?
Please. Milk, no sugar. No biscuits.
Tea for two, please, Miss Maudsley.
Of course, Miss Gray, at once.
Don't people ever tell you that...
That it's an unsuitable job for a woman. They do, and it isn't.
I was going to say, don't they ever tell you your office is extremely difficult to find?
Oh, well, that's the idea of the nameplate.
I'm not sure that a crooked nameplate isn't worse than no nameplate at all, especially in your business. Your founder, how did he die?
He cut his wrists.
Oh, did he?
Here we are. Tea.
Thank you very much, Miss Maudsley. Just there.
There we are.
By the way, is Bevis back?
Oh, yes, Miss Gray. He caught Tompkins.
Oh, thank you.
Tompkins, Sir George, represents a sort of investment. He turned up and attached himself to Bevis, but we're banking on restoring him to his distraught owner once we've discovered who he belongs to.
Ah.
We've built up a reputation for reuniting lost pets with their owners.
I know, that's how I came to hear of you. My wife was having tea with a Mrs. Fortescue last week when you returned the Fortescue cat.
Ah.
You'd found the brute within 30 minutes. You could have charged three times what you did. I gather she's devoted to the animal.
Expensive we may be, but we are honest.
Well, my wife was terribly impressed.
What with, our efficiency or our charges?
Both. That's why I'm here.
Yes, Sir George.
The job I'm offering is part bodyguard, part private secretary, part investigator, and part, well, nursemaid. No knowing how it may turn out.
I'm supposed to be a private investigator.
No doubt, but it doesn't pay to be too purist these days. In any case, you could find yourself involved in detection, though it doesn't seem likely.
Perhaps you could explain what exactly you want me to do?
My wife is the actress Clarissa Lyle.
I thought I recognised her at Mrs. Fortescue.
She hasn't worked much recently.
Ah.
We married in June 78. I'm her third husband, by the way. In July 1980, she was playing Lady Macbeth at the Haymarket. On the third night, she received what she saw as a death threat. These threats have continued intermittently ever since.
And what form exactly do these threats take?
Typewritten notes, each one headed by a small drawing of a coffin or a skull. All of them are quotations from plays my wife has appeared in, and they all deal with death in one form or another. The fear of death, the judgment of death, the inevitability of death.
But they don't specifically threaten her.
Well, she sees this harping on death as threatening. She's sensitive. Actresses have to be, I suppose. They need to be liked.
These notes, do you have them?
Here. The ones she kept, anyway. The first ones were thrown away.
Aye, but to die and go we know not where, to lie in cold obstruction and to rot. Measure for measure, isn't it? Not exactly a personal threat, though.
Perhaps not, but not very friendly.
You know not how to live, nor how to die, but I have an object that shall startle you and make you know whither you are going. I don't know that one. Webster, do you think?
Possibly.
How do they arrive?
By post, most of them. A few were delivered by hand, at the theatre or our London flat. The first half dozen or so were destroyed. These 23 are all we have now.
The first one of all, the one that came when your wife was playing Lady Macbeth, what happened?
She can't remember now what it said. She threw it away, thought it was an isolated bit of malice. Then a second came, and a third, and a fourth. My wife started breaking down on stage, had to be prompted.
Oh.
On the Saturday of the third week, her understudy had to go on. It was quite a struggle to get through the six-week season. And then the same thing happened in her next role. The first quotation appeared on the morning the play opened. It came off after 4 weeks. And my wife's performance may have had something to do with it. She thought so, anyway.
And then?
And then Clarissa didn't act again until she accepted a part in Webster's The White Devil at Nottingham. Victoria something or other.
Victoria Corombona.
Was that it? Mm. I was in New York at the time and didn't see it. But the same thing happened. The first note arrived the day the play opened. This time my wife went to the police. Not much joy. They took it away, thought about it and brought it back. Sympathetic, but made it obvious they didn't take the death threat seriously. They did discover one thing, though. That particular note had been typed on my own machine.
Which is that note?
Here. We've dated them on the back. This is the time I was in New York.
On pain of death, let no man name death to me. It is a word infinitely terrible. This skull and crossbones, Sir George, not quite the same assured touch as the others, has it? And the typing's a bit amateurish. What do you think?
You may be right. Could have been done in a hurry.
You still haven't explained how you think I can help.
I'm coming to that. This weekend, my wife is to play the lead in a production of The Duchess of Malfi.
Oh.
It's taking place on Courcy Island. Do you know it? About 2 miles off the Dorset coast.
Mm-hmm.
The owner's Ambrose Gorringe. It's been in his family since the last century. His grandfather restored the medieval castle in the 1880s. He used to play host to the Prince of Wales and his circle. Edward would arrive with his mistress, Lily Langtry, and they all amuse themselves with amateur theatricals. There's a lovely little Victorian theatre there. The present Gorringe seems intent on restoring castle and theatre to their former glory.
And you want me to go to the island and be with Lady Ralston?
I was hoping to be there myself, but that won't be possible. I have a meeting in the West Country which I can't miss. But she needs someone with her.
Mm.
This performance is important to her. They're doing the play at Chichester in the spring, and if she can regain her confidence, she might feel able to join the company.
Ah, I see.
But there's more to it than that. She's got hold of an idea that the threats may come to a head this weekend.
Oh.
In fact, that someone might try to kill her on Courcy Island.
What makes her think that?
Nothing she can explain, but it's what she feels. She asked me to get you.
And what precisely am I being employed to do, Sir George?
Protect her from nuisance, take any calls, open any letters, be on call at night, and bring a fresh mind to bear on these messages. Find out, if you can, who's responsible. You'll take the job?
Yes, I'll take it.
A little different from finding lost cats. Your rates will be rather higher, I assume.
And the daily rate is precisely the same, Sir George, whatever the job. The final bill depends on the time taken, and any expenses, of course. But as I'll be a guest on the island, they shouldn't be too high. By the way, I'll need to know who else will be there.
Well, by the Saturday afternoon, when the cast and the audience have all arrived, there'll be about 100. But the house party itself is quite small. My wife, of course, with Tolly, Miss Tolgarth, that is, her dresser. Then is your host, Ambrose Gorringe.
Tell me about Mr. Gorringe.
There's not much to tell. He's known my wife since they were both children. Their fathers were in the diplomatic together. Middle-aged, unmarried. Read history at Cambridge, I believe. Authority on Victoriana. Spends a good deal of time and money building up his collection.
I'll take these, and probably the marble as well. Where did you find it?
A private sale, Mr. Gorringe. According to the owners, it's a duplicate of one of those marble limbs of the royal children at Osborne, the ones commissioned by Queen Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
They told me this was the arm of the Princess Royal when a baby. I haven't been able to get down to the Isle of Wight to check.
Oh, poor little Vicky. What a life she was to have. What with her mother, her son, and Bismarck. It's almost irresistible. Ah. But not at that price, Mr. Gaskin, not at that price.
Oh, it's probably unique. I don't know of any other duplicates of the Osborne marbles.
You know, this arm must weigh almost as much as the princess herself. It's a pity we don't know for certain.
I tell you what, Mr. Gorringe, I'll let you have it less 15%. That's cutting my profit to shreds.
You don't like it.
Well, I can't say I'm sorry to see it go. A child's arm and cut off like that. Whenever I look at it, I keep imagining it's oozing blood.
Hmm. All right, I'll have it.
Ah.
I must try it on my house guests next weekend and watch their reaction. We're putting on the Duchess of Malfi, you know.
Mm. Oh, really? Will theatrical productions become a regular event?
No, I think not. Upsets the household. I've already had to reassure my butler that this is a unique event. Now, if this were a full-size male hand, we could use it for one of the props. The play features an amputated hand.
Oh.
As it is, I'll just have to put it on display somewhere in the house. And I think I have the ideal spot.
He inherited the island from an uncle in 77. He was spending a year outside the UK at the time. Something to do with tax avoidance, I believe. Came back to England in 78 and has spent the last few years restoring the castle.
Mm. Who else lives on the island?
Well, he has three servants. The butler is called Munter. Mrs. Munter acts as housekeeper. And then there's Oldfield, the boatman and general factotum.
And this house party, who has he invited besides Lady Ralston?
Well, there's Ivo Whittingham.
Well, the theatre critic.
You know him?
Not to speak to. I know of him, of course.
He's supposed to be doing a piece about the theatre and the performance for one of the colour supplements.
Ah.
Quite an honour for Gorringe, really. Whittingham doesn't do much writing these days. Rather ill, I gather.
You can get dressed now. Is that spleen troubling you?
Since I look and feel like a lopsided pregnant woman, yes, you could say it's troubling me.
Well, time may come when it's better out. No hurry, though. We'll have another think in a month.
I thought you said the spleen's enlarged because it's taken over producing the red blood cells, which my blood's no longer making.
That's more or less what's happening, yes. When one organ ceases to function, another tends to take over.
Yes, sir. Would it be tactless of me to inquire, Sir James, which organ will oblige when you've whipped out the spleen?
Well, let's cross that bridge when we come to it, eh, what?
On pain of death, let no man name death to me. It is a word infinitely terrible.
I'm sorry, Mr. Whittingham, I didn't quite...
Yeah, nothing, Sir James. I was merely quoting Webster.
Actually, Whittingham's an old friend of my wife. She'll be pleased to have him around.
Who else is coming?
There's Roma Lyle, my wife's cousin. Roma. Used to be a schoolmistress, but now keeps a bookshop somewhere in North London.
Mm-hmm.
Unmarried, about 45. I don't know very well. We've only met once or twice. She might bring her partner, but if so, I can't tell you who it is.
My God, Roma, this place stinks.
It won't once we get it cleaned up.
Clean it as much as you like and it'll still look what it is. A basement slum. Oh, God, look at these books. I mean, 9/10 junk. They should be burnt.
Colin? Oh, look at this.
Hmm?
It fell out of one of the books. What is it?
Some kind of old woodcut. Shouldn't think it's worth anything.
We could ask Ambrose Gorringe when we get to the island. He knows about these things.
Yes. I like the skeleton at the top. And I suppose the arrow and the hourglass must mean something.
The great messenger of mortality. It's a good caption.
Fair lady, lay your costly robe aside. No longer may you glory in your pride. Take leave of all your carnal vain delight. I've come to summon you away. Tonight. Spooky.
It puts me in mind of Clarissa.
Clarissa? Why?
I don't know. I don't know why. Give it to me. I'll ask Ambrose Gorringe about it.
It was a mistake buying this junk. We should have stuck to the new stuff. And God knows why Letty taught me to buying all that left-wing garbage upstairs. No one wants it. There are enough cosy left-wing haunts already in this neighbourhood, and it's putting off the other customers. I must have been mad.
Look, Colin, you didn't take on this place simply to please me. You loathed teaching just as much as I did. And I wouldn't have resigned if you hadn't made the first move.
You mean it's all my fault?
All? What all?
It was a mistake.
Well, you chuck it. Stella will be delighted. My God, she must be praying for us to go broke. It's a wonder she doesn't lurk outside counting the customers.
That's not quite fair. She's my wife. She's a right to be worried. I mean, half the money I put in here was hers.
And that, my dear Colin, was the cleverest move she ever made. She made sure that you had enough money to make the business possible, but not enough to make it a success. I'll bet Daddy was behind that. She wants you back, Colin. Can't you see that? Back, neatly trussed like a sacrificial victim to be handed over to dear Daddy and the family business. Oh, she's shrewd, is Stella. A sharp little mind to go with those sharp red nails.
Oh, do shut up, Roma. We've been through all this 20 times.
Oh, darling, I'm sorry. Don't let's quarrel. We're tired, we're hot, and it's a bloody day. Yeah. On Friday, we shut the door and take off for Corsi Island. 3 days of peace, sunshine, good wines, first-class food, and the sea. No creditors, no people, just peace. And my God, don't I need it.
Roma, I'm sorry, I...
Oh, no! No! You can't do this to me. You promised. And I told Clarissa I'm bringing my partner. It's all arranged.
I am sorry. Look, honest. But Stella's father phoned this morning to say he's coming for the weekend. Look, I've got to be there. I've told you what he's like. I'll never hear the end of it if I'm away on a long weekend, leaving her to cope with the kids.
Daddy... In other words, the twin school fees, the car and the package holiday.
Oh, don't knock it.
Oh, what's Clarissa going to think?
Well, what would she think if I did come? She knows I'm married. Wouldn't it look rather odd, the two of us arriving together?
Clarissa isn't exactly a model of purity. And I don't suppose Ambrose Gorringe creeps down his corridor at night checking on where his guests are sleeping. The point is, I was planning to speak to Clarissa this weekend. Tell her about the shop. Ask her if she could help. That's why I wangled the invitation. After all, a third of her money comes to me if she dies without a child. It's all in Uncle's will. It wouldn't harm her to part with some when it's most needed. We'd only be asking for a loan.
I couldn't ask a woman for money.
You wouldn't have to. I'd do the asking... I hoped she'd meet you, like you. Then I could speak to her. Even 30,000 would make all the difference.
How much would you get if she died, then?
I'm not sure. About 200,000, I think. It could be more.
To be quite honest, I'm not sure why Roma Lyle was invited, unless it was a gesture on Gorringe's part to please my wife.
And those are all the guests?
As far as I know. Except for Simon, of course.
Simon?
Oh, sorry, it's Simon Lessing. He's 17, the son of Clarissa's second husband.
Tell me about him.
Well, his father was drowned in August 1977. After that, he wasn't happy living with his relatives, so Clarissa took him on. Mm. We've sort of adopted him. I'm not sure why he's invited either, come to that. Music's his interest. Clarissa probably thought it was time he met more people. He's rather a shy boy.
One last question, Sir George. Lady Ralston is apparently so frightened for her life that she's reluctant to be on Courcy Island without protection. Is there anyone of that company she has reason to fear, to suspect?
You can put that idea out of your head, Miss Gray. She has no reason to suspect any of the house party of wishing to harm her. No reason in the world.
Right. I had to ask. Now, when do you want me to arrive?
Your tickets are in this envelope.
Oh. Thank you.
My wife has telephoned Gorringe to tell him she's bringing a secretary companion. You go down to Spaymouth Jetty. The launch from Crossy will be waiting to pick you up.
Fine.
You'll go over with the other guests.
It's quite typical of Ambrose Gorringe just to send Oldfield in the launch and leave his guests to introduce themselves. I'm Roma Lyle, Clarissa's cousin.
How do you do? My name's Cordelia Gray, but I'm not a guest. I'm going to the island to work.
Good Lord, Ambrose isn't writing another blockbuster, is he?
Not as far as I know. I'm employed by Lady Ralston.
By Clarissa? Doing what, for heaven's sake?
Oh, dealing with her correspondence, making phone calls, generally easing things along while she concentrates on the play.
She's got Tolly to ease things along. Well, what does she think of it? Tolly, I mean.
I haven't the least idea. I haven't met her yet.
Well, I can't see her liking it. You'd best meet Clarissa's stepson, Simon Lessing. He's probably nearer your age than anyone else on this benighted weekend. Simon, over here. Come and say hello to Cordelia Gray. She's Clarissa's secretary.
Clarissa said you'd be coming when she wrote.
How do you do?
I had to get special leave.
From school?
Yes, Melhurst. My housemaster wasn't too pleased. I don't really know why I've been invited.
Does there have to be a reason? A few days' break, a little swimming?
With Clarissa, there's usually a reason. Of course, she told me to bring some music.
You're a pianist?
I play the piano.
He's very good. Clarissa likes showing him off, doesn't she, Simon?
Does she? Oh, I just hope I don't make a fool of myself.
You're discussing the perennially fascinating topic, Clarissa.
Hello, Ivo. I was just saying, she rather enjoys presenting Simon to her friends.
Have you ever been to Courcy Island before, Simon?
No.
No, then she's out to impress Ambrose Gorringe. Don't let her down. Do I know you?
No, I'm Cordelia Gray.
Are you taking part in the play?
I'm here to work. I'm Miss Lyle's secretary, her temporary secretary.
Now, that makes sense. Clarissa's relationships tend to be temporary.
Do you know anything about the performance? Who's taking part?
Oh, didn't Clarissa explain? They're the Cottringham Players, said to be the oldest amateur company in England. They're based in Spaymouth, very convenient.
Ah.
Yeah, they'll all be coming over by launch tomorrow. Look, we turn the headland in a second. You all see the castle.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful. It's just as though the castle was rising from the waves.
Impressive, isn't it? All that rose-red brickwork soaring to the sky.
Oh, but it's so light and graceful. Not what I associate with Victorian architecture at all.
You're interested in Victorian architecture?
Interested, but not at all knowledgeable.
I shouldn't tell Ambrose that. He'll devote the whole weekend to your education.
Is that him, waiting for us at the jetty?
That's him on the left. And there's Clarissa.
Darling! Darling Ivo!
Hello, Clarissa! I'm afraid I'll have to ask for your help, Miss Gray, in getting ashore. I seem to be as weak as a kitten these days.
Of course, Mr. Winkler.
Hello there! Welcome to Courcy Island.
Hello, Ambrose!
I'll get ashore first. Give you my hand.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Clarissa, my darling. Enchanting as ever.
My poor Ivor, what's life doing to you?
Taking its toll, darling, but you seem to have negotiated rather special terms. How do you do it?
Flatterer. Roma, my dear. It's been ages.
Too long, Clarissa.
Weren't you bringing someone with you, your partner?
Something unavoidable cropped up, I'm afraid. I'll save him for another time.
Do, darling. Come on, Simon. Don't lurk back there. Come and be introduced to Mr. Gorringe. Ambrose, darling, this is Simon.
Welcome to Courcy. I've heard a great deal about you.
Hello.
I'm looking forward to hearing you play.
Oh. Come on, Simon. I'll show you your room.
And you must be Miss Gray. Welcome to Courcy Island.
How do you do?
Mrs. Munter will look after you. We've put you in a room next door to Lady Ralston. Mrs. Munter, this is Miss Gray.
Hello, I'm Lady Ralston's new secretary. If there's any post for her, it must come to me first, and I'll take any telephone calls for her.
Well, Opal's just brought a package of post across in the lounge, miss. Would you like to look through it?
Oh, if you don't mind, thank you. Just these two. I'll take them.
Of course, miss. If you'll come with me, miss, I'll show you to your room.
Oh, what a magnificent hall. The staircase. Beautiful things. Oh, the stained glass is quite breathtaking.
The eastern window was commissioned by the original Mr. Herbert Gorringe in the 1860s. It portrays the travels of Ulysses.
So I see. Do you often show visitors around, Mrs. Munter?
I do act as a guide from time to time. Please follow me. And this is your room, miss.
Oh, but this is delightful.
The tiles are originals by William de Morgan. Oh. The mahogany and pine cabinet was painted by William Morris, and the paintings are by John Ruskin. What time would you like your early morning tea, miss?
7:30, please.
Thank you, miss.
Is that you, Miss Gray? Here you are. Our rooms connect, as you'll see. Come in here, will you? Tony will see to your unpacking.
Oh, thank you, but I'd rather do my own.
As you wish. This is my dresser, Miss Tolgarth, Tolly. Meet Miss Cordelia Gray.
Hello.
She's come to help with my correspondence. Just an experiment. She won't be in anyone's way. If she wants anything, look after her, will you?
Of course, Miss Lyle.
I suppose we'd better talk, but it can't be now. Mm-hmm. That extraordinary-looking man, Munter, set lunch in the dining room, but I told him we shall eat on the terrace.
Ah.
That means there's time before lunch for Ambrose to give us all a quick tour of the castle.
Shall I fetch Simon?
Oh, there's no point him trailing round after us. He can go for a swim.
And this is my chamber of horrors. Meet my notorious Victorian murderers and murderesses, all modelled in Staffordshire pottery.
Do they tie up with this display of gallows literature?
Yes, indeed, in some cases. This pair, for example, are the infamous Maria and Frederick Manning, hanged in November 1847 before a crowd of 50,000.
Oh.
Charles Dickens saw the execution and wrote that the crowd's behaviour was so indescribable that he thought he was living in a city of devils.
And this elegant gentleman?
William Corder, aiming his pistol at poor Maria Martin. Mm-hmm. Note the red barn in the distance.
Yes,
of course.
He might have got away with it if her mother hadn't repeatedly dreamed that her daughter's body was buried in the red barn.
The most gruesome part of the whole collection's over here. Nasty little mementos of murder.
But quite fascinating, Clarissa, darling, you must admit. Don't you agree, Miss Gray?
Quite extraordinary.
Yes. That tag end of rope, for instance. Now, that's part of the rope that hanged Dr. Thomas Neal Cream. The Lambeth poisoner, in November 1892. The stained linen nightdress was worn by Constance Kent.
Oh,
not the one she had on when she slit the throat of her small stepbrother, unfortunately. It has a certain interest, all the same. That pair of handcuffs with the key were used on young Courvoisier, who murdered his master, Lord William Russell, in 1840.
And the marble of the baby's arm?
Ah. No criminal interest, as far as I know, but it doesn't look out of place somehow. The man who sold it to me would approve. He kept imagining that the limb was oozing blood.
But it's perfectly hateful. It's disgusting.
It may be the only extant copy of one of the limbs of the royal children made for Queen Victoria.
Mm.
And if you dislike this, Clarissa, you should see the Osborne collection. They look as if the prince consort had descended on the royal nursery with a machete.
It's repulsive. What on earth possessed you, Ambrose? Get rid of it.
Hello. I didn't expect to see you, Tolly. What on earth are you doing here? Is anything the matter?
Here's your towel.
Oh, thanks. It's not all that warm. Why did you come down?
Why don't you leave?
Leave?
Why don't you leave this place? Leave her.
Leave Clarissa? Well, why should I? What do you mean?
Well, she doesn't want you. Haven't you noticed that? You aren't happy. Why go on pretending?
But I am happy. Where could I go? My aunt wouldn't want me back. I haven't any money.
There's a spare room in my flat. It's only small. It used to be my daughter's before she died. You could have that for a start. It isn't much, but you could stay there until you found something better.
But how could I find somewhere? What would I live on?
You're 17, aren't you? You're not a child. You could find something to do.
But what? I'm going to be a pianist. I need Clarissa's money.
Ah, yes. You need Clarissa's money.
In any case, I'm perfectly happy as I am.
Suppose she gets tired of you, like she did of your father.
What do you mean? She loved my father. They loved each other. He explained to me before he left my mother. Clarissa was the most marvellous thing that had ever happened to him. He had no choice.
There's always a choice.
But they adored each other. He was so happy.
Then why did he drown himself?
It's not true. I don't believe you.
Don't, if you don't want to. But just remember what I've said when your turn comes.
Why should he do it? Why?
To make her feel sorry, I suppose. Isn't that usually why people kill themselves? But he should have known. Clarissa doesn't understand about guilt.
There was an inquest. They found it was accidental death. And he didn't leave a note.
If he did, no one saw it. But then, it was Clarissa who found his clothes on the beach, wasn't it?
Yes.
Suppose she died. What would you do then?
Why on earth should Clarissa die? She isn't ill, is she? Well, she never said anything about being ill. What's wrong with her?
Nothing's wrong with her.
Well, then why talk about dying?
Because she thinks she's going to die. And, you know, sometimes when people think that strongly enough, they do die.
Bring me the casket hither and the glass. You get no lodging here tonight, my lord.
Indeed, I must persuade one.
Very good. I hope in time it will grow into a custom that noblemen shall come with cap and knee to purchase a night's lodging of their wives.
I must lie here.
You must. You are a lord of misrule.
Indeed, my rule is only in the night.
To what use will you put me?
We'll sleep together.
Alas, what pleasure can two lovers find in sleep?
My lord, I lie with her often, and I know she'll much disquiet you.
See, you are complained of.
For she's the sprawling... Oh, I'm sorry. I am sorry, Mr. DeVille.
For heaven's sake, Cariola, you've only got three lines to remember.
Oh?
Do cut out the coyness. You're not playing No-No Nanette.
I'm frightfully sorry, Mr. DeVille.
All right, take it from the top.
But must we? Every time we go back, I lose the impetus.
From the beginning, please.
This bloody box is driving me mad. If we have to have background music in this scene, and God alone knows why, then surely Ambrose can find something more suitable than those damn Scottish tunes.
It was your idea, darling, as I remember. Brilliant touch, too, since we're in Victorian costume.
It was a musical box I wanted, not a medley of Scottish airs. And do we have to have a bloody audience? Cordelia, can't you find something useful to do? God knows we're paying you enough. Do you propose to sit on your arse all afternoon?
Yeah, Miss Gray and I will take a walk. The performance hasn't been exactly riveting so far, and the air outside will be fresher. Come along, Miss Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Whittingham.
Oh, don't mention it.
This may be a stupid question. Grey isn't an uncommon name, but you're not by any chance related to Redvers Grey.
He was my father.
I thought there was something. It's the eyes. You know, he had a great influence on my generation at Cambridge.
Yeah.
He had the gift of making rhetoric sound sincere. And now that the rhetoric and the dream are out of fashion, I suppose he's forgotten. But I should like to have known him.
So should I.
Oh, like that, was it? The old story. Revolutionary idealist dedicated to mankind in the abstract, but not much good at caring for his own kid. Mm. Not that I can criticize. I haven't done too well with mine.
I think I should have liked him if we'd had time. I did spend 6 months with him and the comrades in Germany and Italy. And then he died.
You make death sound like a betrayal. What about your mother?
She died when I was born.
Another betrayal. So, and who looked after you?
Foster parents most of the time. Then when I was 11, I won a scholarship to a convent.
Oh.
That was a mistake. A school, not the scholarship. They'd mixed me up with another C. Grey who was a Roman Catholic. I don't think Father liked it, but by the time he bothered to reply to the education officer's letter, I was settled and they didn't like moving me. I wanted to stay anyway.
Redvers Grey with a convent-educated daughter. And did they succeed in converting you? That would have taught Papa to answer his letters.
No, they didn't convert me. But then they didn't try it. Oh, look out, Mr. Whittingham. Oh, you're tired. Here, let's sit down for a while. Over there. No, I liked it in the convent. I suppose it was the first time I felt secure. Life wasn't messy anymore.
Yes, yes, it must have been reassuring. Even one's sins neatly classified. These venial, those mortal. Mortal sin, it has a note of splendid finality, hasn't it? It almost dignifies wrongdoing. I suppose a mortal sin has to be something really special.
It's a grievous offence against the laws of God which puts the soul at risk of eternal damnation.
In other words, something really evil. If, that is, you believe in the existence of evil.
Oh, yes. I believe in the existence of evil.
In that case, there's something you should know. Clarissa once did something you might dignify as evil. And I have a feeling that for Clarissa it could prove mortal.
Are you sure you want to tell me this?
Quite sure. I think it may help you in what you're here to do, whatever that may be.
Very well.
It happened during the run of Macbeth in July 1980. Tolly, Miss Tolgarth, had an illegitimate daughter 4 years earlier. Well, there was no particular secret about it. Most of us knew about Vicky. A really sweet child. Tolly brought her to the theatre occasionally, but usually the girl was at home with a childminder. That's how it was when the tragedy happened.
The tragedy?
It was 2 days before the opening. Clarissa was at the theatre and the minder was in charge of Vicky. The child had slipped out into the street and was playing in the gutter behind a parked lorry. The driver didn't see her and reversed.
Oh.
She was horribly injured. They rushed her to hospital and operated, and she stood there very well. We all thought she'd make it. But during the opening night of Macbeth, the hospital telephoned to say there'd been a relapse and to ask Tolly to go at once. Tolly always answered the phone in the dressing room, but by pure chance, Clarissa took the call. She'd just come off for her Act 3 costume change. The banquet scene, you know. She put down the receiver and told Tolly that the hospital wanted her to visit, but that there was no hurry. Oh, after the performance would be all right. Tolly wanted to ring back, but Clarissa wouldn't let her. Shortly after the curtain came down, the hospital rang to say the child was dead.
My God. Well, how do you know all this?
I was there, in Clarissa's dressing room, when the first call came. You could say I had a rather privileged relationship at the time. When the play ended, I went backstage to take Clarissa out to supper. Tolly was still there then. It was a few minutes after we left that the hospital rang.
Oh.
We were all appalled when we heard the news. I took the trouble to get in touch with the hospital and ask about that first message.
And when you learned what had happened, was that when you stopped being a privileged person?
I should like to say it was. But the truth is, Clarissa dropped me when she discovered that her sexual favours were not an automatic guarantee of my literary ones. Like most men, I'm capable of betrayal, but not that particular sort. She found she couldn't buy favourable notices from me on tick.
Who was the child's father?
No one knows. Except Ollie, presumably, and she isn't saying. The question is, who did Clarissa think he was?
Not her own husband, surely?
At that time it was Lessing, Simon's father. Poor besotted fool. He and Clarissa had only been married a year. No, my guess is our respected producer, Adrian DeVille.
Oh, you mean the man directing the Duchess of Malfi here?
The same.
Was Clarissa in love with him?
I don't know what Clarissa means by that word. She may have wanted him. He was around at the time.
Why is he here? He's famous. He doesn't have to bother with an amateur production.
Why are any of us here? It's possible he sees Corsi Island as a future dramatic Glyndebourne. Ambrose could make something of his Corsi festival if he's prepared to spend money. Not commercially, of course, but he could have some fun with it once he's got rid of Clarissa.
And does he want to get rid of Clarissa?
Oh, yes. Hadn't you noticed? She's trying to take him over, him, his theatre and his island. He likes his private kingdom. Clarissa is a particularly persistent invader.
I don't see how Clarissa can live with the memory of that child's death.
I'm not sure she can. When a person is terrified of dying, it could be because with one part of their minds they feel they deserve it.
How do you know she's terrified?
Because there are some emotions which even an actress as experienced as Clarissa can't hide. Look, there are explanations. It was the first night. She was totally immersed in the part. She was Lady Macbeth at Dunsinane Castle. She was all keyed up for the banquet scene. I doubt whether she'd have left the theatre at that moment to go to her own dying child. It didn't occur to her that someone else might want to.
I don't see how Miss Tolgath can go on working for her. I couldn't.
But you will. I confess, I'm intrigued about your precise function here, but presumably you won't throw in your hand.
That's different. I'm just a temporary employee, but Tolly believed her when she said the child wasn't in immediate danger. She was robbed of sharing her daughter's last moments on Earth. And how can she stay with Clarissa?
They've been together almost all their lives. Tolly's mother was Clarissa's nurse. The instinct for worship is remarkably persistent. Though she slay me, yet shall I trust her. A perfectly well-documented phenomenon. But if, like any of us come to that, she ever faced the truth about her own feelings, then, I admit, I do wonder what would happen.
But it's so odd of him, Roma, darling.
Yes.
Surely we didn't frighten him away. I thought you wanted to show him off. Why else did you angle for an invitation? Who are you ashamed of, him or us?
We suddenly heard that an important American client would be calling at the shop this Saturday. Mm-hmm. Colin had to be there.
Oh, how conscientious of him. But I'm relieved to hear you have clients of any sort, let alone important American ones. Congratulations.
Enjoying yourself so far?
It's all right. Nothing terrible's happened, I suppose.
Done any swimming?
A little.
I haven't got round to it yet. What's the water like?
Quite cold, really.
Oh.
Oh, no, I take no interest in contemporary politics at all.
How wise.
But you can't opt out of all responsibility for what's happening in your own country.
Oh, but I can. I didn't collude in the depreciation of its currency, the spoliation of its countryside, the desecration of its towns, the destruction of its grammar schools, the mutilation of the liturgy of its church. Why should I feel personal responsibility for any of it?
I was thinking of aspects some of us see as more important. That our society is more violent, less compassionate, more unequal than it's been since the 19th century. And then there's the National Front. Well, you can't ignore the Front.
Indeed I can. Together with militant tendency, the trots and the rest of the rabble. Oh, you'll be surprised at my capacity for ignoring the ignorable.
But you can't just decide to live in another age.
Why not?
and I'm using the telephone.
If any of you decides to die in the next few days, all necessary measures will be taken to ease you on your way.
And what happens to this Eden of yours when Adam, solaced with no Eve, finally returns to the dust?
It would be almost worth marrying and breeding to have a son to follow me here. But sons, even if the process of getting them, deceptively simple physiologically, wasn't so fraught with practical and emotional complications, sons are notoriously unreliable. A son might convert the castle to a casino and lay down a 9-hole golf course.
Talking of children, what's the news of your two, Ivo? Is Matthew still living in that Kennington squat?
As we don't communicate, I'm not in a position to say. Angela, on the other hand, writes a filial letter of boring length every month. My ex-wife, in case you meant to inquire, is with him in Johannesburg, which she calls Joburg.
Darling, I wasn't asking for a family history.
Weren't you? I rather thought you were.
Was worth hearing.
It was very well played.
Thank you.
He is good, isn't he?
Now, how about a song?
Oh,
does anyone sing? There's a book of songs on the piano.
Oh, The Ash Grove, one of my favorites.
Please sing it for us, Miss Gray.
Oh, shall I?
Oh, come on.
Yes, please. Will you accompany me, Simon?
Yes, of course.
Quite lovely.
I should have had more than enough of amateurs before the weekend's out. I'm going to bed. Simon, it's time you called it a day. I'll see you to your room. Cordelia, ring for Tolly, will you, and tell her I'm ready for her. Then come up in 15 minutes. I want to discuss arrangements for tomorrow. Ivo, you're drunk.
Black marks all round. We should have realised that we're here to applaud Clarissa's talent, not to demonstrate our own. If you plan a career as secretary companion, Cordelia, you'll have to learn more tact.
Are you drunk, Ivo?
I shall be sober enough for what I have to do tomorrow.
Oh, here you are. I've sent Tolly away so that we can talk. Don't just stand there. Get yourself a chair.
Oh, yes, of course.
You seem to have enjoyed yourself this evening. Perhaps I should remind you that you were hired as a detective, not an after-dinner entertainer.
Well, perhaps if you were honest with them and told them why I'm here, they'd be less likely to treat me as a fellow guest.
What good would that do? If you don't mix with them, how can you watch them? Besides, the men like you. I've seen Ivo and Simon looking at you. Don't pretend you don't know it. I hate that kind of sexual coyness.
I wasn't trying to pretend anything.
Pass me that deep cleanser, would you? Tell me, what do you think of Simon's playing?
I'm not really qualified to judge. Obviously, he has talent.
Oh, talent! That's common enough. One doesn't invest £9,000 or more in mere talent. Can he succeed? That's the question. I'll ask Ambrose after the play.
I can't worry about anything till then.
I think we should discuss the messages and our plans for the weekend, especially tomorrow. We ought to have spoken earlier.
Oh, there really hasn't been time. Anyway, you know what you're here for. If there are any more messages, I don't want to know about them. It's vital I get through tomorrow's performance. If I can only get my confidence back, I can face almost anything.
Even the knowledge of who's doing this to you?
Even that.
How many of the people here know about the messages?
Well, Tolly. I haven't any secrets from her. I expect Ivor knows nothing happens in the West End he doesn't get to hear about. And Ambrose. He was in my dressing room once when a note was pushed under the door. Simon doesn't, unless Tolly's told him, and I can't think why she should.
How about your cousin?
Roma? Oh, she doesn't know, and if she did, she wouldn't care.
Tell me about her.
There's not much to tell. And what there is boring. That towel, please, darling. We are first cousins. My father's younger brother ran off with a barmaid, made a mess of his life, and then he expected Daddy to help him out. And he did, well, at least as far as Roma was concerned. She was always staying with us, especially after her own father died. Poor little orphan Annie, perpetually miserable and such a bore. She wasn't a bit grateful.
Should she have been?
Well, I think so. Daddy didn't have to take her in. She could hardly expect him to treat her the same as me, his own child.
Ah, yes, children. You know, you should have told me about Tolly's daughter. If I'm to help, I need to know anything that might be relevant.
But that isn't relevant. It was all a mistake. Tolly knows that. Everyone knows it. I suppose Ivor told you. Typical. Can't you see he's sick? He's dying. And he's eaten up with jealousy. He always has been. Jealousy and malice. He could have been a second Tynan, and look at him now, dying on his feet. He'd no right to come here looking as he does. It's like having a death's head at the table. It's indecent.
So, Miss Tolgarth couldn't have had anything to do with the notes?
Of course not. What an idea. She's devoted to me. If you can't see that, you're not much of a detective. Besides, she can't type. The messages are typed, in case you haven't noticed.
All of them? They've always been typed, even the ones that came when you were playing Lady Macbeth?
Yes, I suppose so. It was a long time ago. It wasn't my fault. I didn't kill the child. Anyway, the hospital had no right to phone like that. They knew it was a theatre, that we were in the middle of a performance. Besides, she couldn't have done anything even if I'd let her go. The child was unconscious. She wouldn't have known her. It's sentimental and morbid, this sitting by the bedside waiting for people to die. What good does it do? And I had 3 costume changes in the 3rd act. What are you looking like that for? I'm not paying you to judge me.
I'm not judging you. I wanted to help. But you have to be honest with me. What is it you're really afraid of?
Don't you know? Death. That's what I'm afraid of. It isn't the fact of death. It's my death. There was never a time when I didn't see the skull beneath the skin. I knew the facts of death before I knew the facts of life. I mean, no one can say, don't worry, it may never happen. It will happen. To me, I can't describe the fear. How terrible it is. Wave after wave of panic sweeping over me. Sometimes, I hold up my hand like this and think, here it is, part of me, warm, living. And one day it'll hang, white and cold and unfeeling and useless. And then it'll rot, and I shall rot. Now I've told you, and you can despise me.
I don't despise you.
Aren't you afraid of death?
It doesn't seem reasonable to be afraid of something that's inevitable and universal.
Words, just words. All they mean is that you're young and healthy and don't have to think about dying. To lie in cold obstruction and to rot. That was in one of the messages.
I know.
And there's another to add to the collection. I've been keeping it for you. It came by post to the London flat yesterday morning. You'll find it in the bottom of my jewel case. Over there. No, by the bedside table. On the left.
Oh, I have it. It's a beautiful casket.
Ambrose gave it to me this morning. A good luck present for the performance tomorrow. I took a fancy to it when I saw it 6 months ago, but it took a time before he got the message. The letter's in a secret drawer. Not so very secret, actually. You better bring it over here.
Oh, it's surprisingly heavy, isn't it?
Here. You press this.
Oh, that's neat.
You see this notice? This is probably the most important notice I ever had. I was playing Hester in Rattigan's The Deep Blue Sea at the Spaymouth Playhouse, just across the water. That was in 1977, Jubilee year. I wasn't staying here on the island because Ambrose was abroad for a year, something to do with tax, you have to be out of the country for 12 months or something. The theatre's closed now, alas. But they seem to like me. See, Clarissa Lyle triumphs in Rattigan Revival. Well, only a small provincial paper, of course, but still.
What a nice headline. And is that the letter?
Ah, yes. Here you are.
A coffin this time. Who must dispatch me? I account this world a tedious theatre, for I must play a part in it against my will. Is that from the Duchess of Malfi?
That's right.
Not very appropriate. He must be reaching the end of suitable quotations.
Perhaps he knows he won't need many more. There's only tomorrow. Perhaps he knows that tomorrow will be the end.
Ah! Good morning, Miss Gray.
Good morning.
Well, it looks as if we're going to be lucky in the weather.
Yes.
The guests should arrive in sunshine and get back without risk of parting with their supper. The crossing can be quite treacherous in bad weather. Will you have coffee?
Thank you.
And is our leading lady awake?
Not yet, and I'm rather pleased she isn't. Look, I found this pushed under Clarissa's door this morning.
The great messenger of mortality. Somewhat melodramatic.
Is the woodcut yours? If so, someone has mutilated it for you. Look on the back.
Oh, dear me. Thus it lightens into action. I am come to kill thee. Lines from the Duchess. So the messages are still coming, I did wonder. I take it that weeding out this kind of nuisance is one of your duties.
One of them. So, is it yours? It no. looks old and valuable.
No, it's interesting, but not my period.
Mr. Gorringe, this is your house. Miss Lyle is your guest.
I accept the implied rebuke. One's guests certainly have the right not to be menaced while under one's roof, but what would you have me do? I'm not a policeman. I can hardly interrogate my other guests. Besides, is it any more than a practical joke in poor taste? Surely the best response is a dignified silence. Clarissa should demonstrate a total unconcern.
And that's what she will do, at least until after the play. She won't see this. I can trust you not to tell her.
Of course. I have a strong interest in Clarissa's success, remember. Incidentally, that woodcut belongs to Roma.
Roma? How do you know?
She told me she found it in a second-hand book and thought I might be interested. She showed it to me yesterday, just before the rehearsal, and I left it on the blotter on my desk in the business room.
Where anyone could have seen and taken it.
You sound like a detective. No doubt you'll be interested to know that the message was probably typed on the business room machine.
Well, I can check that at least.
Oh, before you go, something else has occurred. Rather more annoying than a poison pen letter.
Oh.
Someone has broken the lock of the display cabinet and taken the marble arm. If, during your duties as secretary companion, you should happen to learn who it is, I'd be grateful if you'd suggest that it's returned. Mm. I admit the marble's not to everyone's taste, but I have a fondness for it.
When did you notice it had gone?
Well, Monta tells me it was in the display case when he locked up last night, and that was at 10 minutes past midnight. I found it missing and the lock forced when I went to the kitchen to make tea at 7 this morning.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. At least until after the play.
I think it vital that Clarissa doesn't know. The least thing could upset her. We'll just have to hope no one else notices it's missing.
And if they do, I suppose I can say I've removed it to please Clarissa. It's humiliating to have to lie, but if you think it important...
I do, very.
Good morning, Ambrose. Any breakfast?
George, my dear fellow. Of course. But where did you spring from?
Gone through my meeting late yesterday. Drove most of the night and slept in a lay-by. Thought Clarissa would like me to put in an appearance if I could make it. Good morning, Miss Gray.
Sir George.
Don't suppose Clarissa's up yet?
Not yet.
But how did you get to the island? I didn't hear a launch.
Found a couple of early fishermen. I've been on the island for a couple of hours. Didn't like to disturb you. Yes, I will have coffee.
Oh. Ooh. What sort of a day?
Looks as if it'll be fine. Ah. Your husband's just arrived. Apparently his meeting ended sooner than expected.
George? But that's ridiculous. He isn't expected till late tonight.
Well, he's here.
Oh. Tug on that bell rope, will you? It's time Tolly brought in my tea.
I wondered whether you'll still be wanting me.
Well, of course I'll still want you. What possible difference does this make? You know what you're here to do. If someone's out to get me, they aren't going to stop because George has arrived.
Before Miss Tolgarth gets here, could you tell me the programme for today?
Don't you know? I thought I'd explained it. The curtain's due to rise at 3:30. Ambrose is arranging an early lunch about midday, and I shall rest up here alone from 1 o'clock. Mm. You can call me at exactly 2:45. Mm-hmm. The launch from Spaymouth will be bringing the cast at about 2:30, and there's a larger hired launch for the guests. That'll be arriving at about 3.
And this morning, what's planned for the 3 hours between breakfast and lunch? I think we should try to stay together.
We shall all stay together. Ambrose will be hosting a sightseeing trip to see the skulls of Courcy.
The skulls of Courcy? Do you mean real skulls?
Oh, they're real enough. In the crypt of the church. Ambrose will recite the famous legend. Well, that should put us all nicely in the mood for the horrors of Amalfi.
Looks more like a Turkish bath than a church. I'm sorry, Gorringe, but I can't admire it. Who did you say the architect was?
George Frederick Bodley. And I'm sorry you don't like it. The paintings on the reredos are by Lord Leighton. And the glass is by William Morris's firm. They specialised in these lighter hues. The east window is considered rather fine.
I don't see how anyone could actually pray in this place. Oh, is that the war memorial?
Well, the wreaths appear to have been in place some little time by the look of them.
And there'll be fresh ones on November the 11th. Munter makes them from our own laurels and hangs one up each year. Yeah, well, his father was killed in the war. In the Navy, I think. Anyway, he was drowned. He told me that much.
And do you assist at this charade?
No, he hasn't asked me. It's a purely private ceremony. I'm not sure I'm even supposed to know that it happens.
Well, it throws a new light on Munter, though. Who would suspect him of that streak of romanticism? But it's all a bit pointless, isn't it? No one seems to know any longer what Remembrance Day is supposed to be for.
It's for remembering the good chaps who gave their lives fighting for us. Once a year, for 2 minutes, you wouldn't think that was too much to ask.
Indeed.
At our last parade, the padre delivered a sermon about the Third World, Ramsay.
I suppose he thought world peace was relevant.
Armistice Day isn't to do with peace, it's to do with war and remembering one's dead. A nation that can't remember its dead will soon cease to be worth dying for.
Very true.
And what's so peaceful about the Third World, anyway?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will follow me, I'll lead the way down to the crypt where we keep our skulls. This way.
Of course, I've seen all this before. It still sends shivers down my spine.
Oh, this part is Norman, isn't it?
Quite right, Ivo. We're in the original structure down here. Now, are we all assembled? I'll put on the electric light now.
Oh, good grief.
Oh, my God. Who on earth were all these people?
Generations of Corsi folk.
But to pack all these skulls together, row after row of them, it's obscene.
But practical, Miss Lyle, you must admit, the optimum use of available space.
Oh, hundreds of grinning skeletons. Mm. Deliciously horrific, don't you think?
It's like a nightmare.
And all wedged tightly together. Isn't that cement? Some of them have been cemented together.
How observant, Miss Gray. Yes, that was found necessary some years ago when the skulls on the bottom rows began to crumble under the weight.
Who gathered all these skulls together?
My revered forebear, Herbert Gorringe, in the 1860s, soon after he bought the place. The story goes that all the inhabitants of Corsi Island were wiped out in the 17th century. Apparently, the de Corsi at that time had taken to exercising his droit de seigneur a little too freely. Local maidens from the mainland abducted, raped, and their tortured, mutilated bodies brought in on the tide days or weeks later. No one dared to do anything. Then came the bubonic plague. It raged particularly fiercely on this coast, but the island was safe. Till one day, the father of one of de Corsi's victims, knowing he was infected, launched his boat and set sail for the island. The de Corsis and their court were at dinner when the door to the great hall opened and he appeared, his huge, shambling, sea-drenched figure stumbling towards his enemy. There was a moment of astonished silence, and in that moment, he reached the Lord, flung his great arms around him, and kissed him full on the mouth. And the plan worked. De Corsi and all his people were wiped out.
Well, that story would make an opera. All you need is a Verdi, or perhaps a Benjamin Britten.
And when great-uncle Herbert began planting his pleasure garden, he kept turning up skeletons. So, his men collected the skulls and arranged them here.
Darling, your island's a positive repository of horrors. There's something much closer in time, isn't there? Tell us about the devil's kettle.
Oh. Well, that story is rather beastly.
Oh, darling, don't be so stuffy. It's 40 years old at least. And I know about it anyway, but I want to see where it happened. And I've got a personal interest. George was here on the island at the time, weren't you, darling? Did you know that George was here?
Yes, I know.
Whatever it is, you may as well show us. Clarissa won't give you any peace until you do. Right. It can hardly be worse than this place.
Well, if you insist. We have to go down even further than we are, though, and to do that, I must unlock this door. We keep the key here. It's a bit stiff. Now, this way. Two abreast only, please. And stick together. Watch your footing on these steps. They're rather slippery. They're worn right down. Oh, they were used daily for hundreds of years.
Careful,
it's all right. Don't panic, anybody. No, I'd forgotten that the lights are on at times. Which I'll find the button in a second. There.
I wish you'd warn us before playing silly tricks.
No trick, I assure you, and it won't happen again.
We must be 40 feet below ground. How is it ventilated?
By shafts. One of them comes up into the concrete bunker they built in the war to guard the southern approach to the island. There are several others. Right, now, everybody, gather round. This trapdoor leads down directly to the devil's kettle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just draw back the bolts and open it, and you'll be able to see.
do you get down into the cave?
There's an iron ladder next to the shaft. See, the other side.
Ah.
Runs down the wall.
Oh, yes. Now, tell.
It happened in 1940. The island was taken over by the government as a camp and interrogation centre. Foreign nationals, suspected spies, Nazi sympathisers, you know the sort of thing. That's when you were stationed here, wasn't it, George?
Right.
In March 1940, there were about 50 internees on Kursi. Among them, a hardcore of dedicated Nazis. They suspected one of their group, a boy of 22, of having betrayed their organisation to the British during interrogation. Perhaps he had. Or perhaps he was a British undercover agent, I don't know. What is beyond dispute is that the Nazis convened a secret court in the crypt of the church and condemned him to death. They brought him, bound and gagged, down that passageway to this spot. They pulled open the trap door. Look down. At the moment, the water level's about 10 feet below us. That's because the tide's on the turn. At high tide, the cave is always flooded. Every one of those iron rungs is covered. They bound their victim to the ladder, and they left him there to drown. He was a very tall young man. He died slowly in the darkness. And he died hard. Later, one of them crept back to untie him and let his body float out to sea.
Not the pleasantest way to die.
How did the story get out?
Someone talked eventually, I suppose. But not until after the war. Someone may have condoned what happened. After all, the army was in charge here, yet the internees got their hands on the keys to the crypt and the secret passage. And that suggests at least a degree of official carelessness.
What was he called, darling, the boy who died?
His name was Carl Blythe.
Oh, yes, Blythe. And the extraordinary thing is that he was English. Well, his father was anyway, his mother was German. And George was actually at school with him, weren't you, darling? They were at Melhurst together. Do they still remember him, I wonder, Simon? But you didn't like him, did you, George? He was 3 years older than you, and a bully. In fact, you hated him. And then to find him here, and at your mercy, wasn't it odd?
Can we get out of here? I feel like a voyeur.
Because I feel cold.
My wife has satisfied her curiosity. Perhaps we might go.
Poor Ralston. An instructive episode, don't you think?
Oh, I thought it was horrible. Does she always need to psych herself up with an exhibition of cruelty before a performance?
Well, she's nervous, certainly. Ralston's control, however, is admirable.
It'll be interesting to see what happens if the control ever snaps.
Mm. Well, I think I'll go for a swim.
Well, not so soon after lunch, Simon, darling. Take a walk first.
All right. See you all later at the theatre.
Bye-bye. Time to rest.
Coffee?
Thank you. No, Ambrose, not before a performance. I thought you knew that. Will you ask Tolly to bring up the tea tray at once? China tea. She knows the sort I have. George, will you come up in 5 minutes? I'll see you later, Cordelia.
All better right. Make it 1:10.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Clarissa, just a moment. I've something to ask you.
Come in, Cordelia.
Lady Ralston.
Hold on for a moment, would you? Sit down. Can you imagine it, George? 25,000, that's what she asked for. Came right out with it, red-faced like a child begging for more pocket money. Now, of all time, she couldn't even wait till after the performance. I haven't got any money. I'm an actress. Mm. Talk about crass stupidity.
Important to her, I expect. Couldn't bear the suspense of waiting. Had to know.
Oh, she never did have any sense of timing, not even as a child. Trust Roma to pick the wrong moment. Part of her general insensitivity. By God, she chose the wrong moment this time.
Would there have been a right one?
I told her outright. I'm not prepared to hand over capital to support a lover who hasn't the guts or decency to come and ask for it himself. And I threw in some damn sound advice for good measure. If you have to buy yourself a man, he's not worth having. She's madly in love with him, of course. That's what this shop of theirs is all about, a ploy to get him away from his wife.
Roman love, I ask you.
My dear, is all that our concern?
The money's my concern. Apart from anything else, I haven't a hope in hell of making a go of it. No capital, no experience, no sense. Why should I throw good money after bad?
As you say.
Cordelia, go and get yourself dressed.
Oh, right.
Then lock your door and come out this way. I don't want you fussing about next door while I'm resting.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you'll be wearing that Indian thing again.
Well,
it shouldn't take long to get into.
None of my clothes take long to get into.
Nor to get out of, I dare say.
Oh, Clarissa.
Nah. Dear George, always so gallant.
I wondered whether you'd like me to stay next door while you rest. The connecting door could be open or locked as you like. I wouldn't make any noise.
I've told you I don't want you next door or anywhere near me, for that matter. Oh. I can't speak verse when I know someone's listening.
Yes.
And I might want to. With the three doors locked and no telephone, I suppose I can hope to be left in peace. Now do go and change. Collect anything you want from your room.
Very well. I won't be a moment.
And don't rely on being able to watch out front. I may want you backstage.
All right.
Well, I'll be off now. I won't come back before the performance. I'll see you backstage after.
Goodbye, George. Cordelia. I'm setting the alarm for 2:45. You can come back about then, and I'll let you know if there's anything I want you to do during the performance.
Fine. Well, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I've locked my door and left the key in.
I want to check that. Then I'll lock the communicating door myself.
Very well. But if you want me, I'll be within calling distance. I can always get a chair from my room and sit at the end of the corridor with a book.
Can't you understand English? What are you trying to do? Spy on me?
No,
I've told you I don't want you next door. And I don't want you pussyfooting up and down the corridor.
Yes,
I don't want you or anyone near me. What I want now is to be left in peace.
Then will you at least roll up one of your towels and wedge it against the door? I don't want anyone delivering notes to you by hand.
What do you mean? Nothing has happened since I arrived. Nothing.
And I just want to make sure it stays that way.
All right. It's not a bad idea. I'll block the bottom of the door.
Right. I'm going. Please lock the door behind me. I'll wait outside till I'm sure.
Goodbye, Cordelia.
Yes. Well, goodbye.
Oh.
Lady Ralston, it's nearly 2:45. Lady Ralston? Oh, you've unlocked the door. Are you up already? It's 3:15. Lady Oh, no. Oh, my God! Oh, Sir George! Oh, my God!
What is it,
Miss Gray? What's happening? It's Lady
Ralston. Stop that bloody clock.
Yes, I stop it.
I can't see a damn thing. What's happened? Draw the curtains.
Yes.
I'm afraid it looks as though...
I'm sorry.
Merciful heaven.
I'm so sorry. You employed me to look after her. I was here to keep her safe. I should have stayed with her.
You couldn't have known.
It's her face. Someone has destroyed her face.
And there's what did it.
The baby's arm. Oh, those little marble fingers.
Covered with blood.
Oh.
Dripping with blood.
Don't touch it.
But look. Look, underneath, isn't that...
It is. Another message. The blood, I can't quite... Other sins only speak. Murder shrieks out. The element of water moistens the earth, but blood flies upwards and bedews the heavens.
Horrible, horrible.
Oh, I should never have left her.
I didn't believe she was in any danger. No one did. And she wouldn't have let you stay with her, you or anyone. Don't blame yourself.
Oh, but I knew the marble had been taken. I should have warned her.
Against what? Oh. You couldn't have expected this. Don't blame yourself, Cordelia. Go on, you better ring the police at once.
Yes.
We mustn't touch anything. Both these rooms must be locked,
And isn't the audience on the way by launch? We'd better prevent them from landing.
And I'll organise a search party.
Well, mightn't it be better to wait for the police?
I'm not prepared to wait. Where's Oldfield?
In his cottage, I imagine. The stable.
Now, I'll get him to take out the launch and patrol the channel. That'll block any escape by sea.
Well, I think we'd better leave the room and lock the door till the police come.
Quite right. Come along, Gorin.
Yes.
Oh. I'll find Oldfield. You ring the police.
Yes.
What's up, sir? Where's Miss Lyle? It's nearly 3 o'clock.
Excuse me, Tolly.
It's late. You're supposed to have called her.
You can't go in. She's dead. She's been murdered.
I have to go in. She always needs me before a performance.
No, there's not going to be a performance. Miss Lyle is dead. Murdered. I'm just about to ring the police. Until they arrive, no one can go into that room.
The boy? Does the boy know?
Simon? No, not yet. No one knows except Sir George. We've only just discovered the body.
You'll break it gently, sir. It'll be a shock to him.
It's a shock for us all.
Not, I think, sir, for one of us. If you'll excuse me.
I've never understood that woman. I doubt whether Clarissa did. Why this sudden concern for Simon? She's never shown any particular interest in the boy. Oh, well. I'd better get on with telephoning the police. But who should I ring? The chief constable or the CID?
Well, I should ring the Spamers police and leave it to them.
I'll do it from my office. Spamers police. I'm speaking from Courcy Island, from the castle. It's Sir Ambrose Gorringe. I'm afraid there's been a terrible accident over here. No, that's not right. A murder. Yes, I'm quite sure. Lady Ralston. Miss Clarissa Lyle, the actress. Well, we had a performance planned for the theatre this afternoon. Miss Lyle was taking the lead, and she was staying here with friends. We found her a few minutes ago in her bedroom. No, it's clearly murder. I won't go into details if you don't mind, but it's very messy. Oh, and I noticed that her jewel box is missing. Right. Yes, we've locked the room. Yeah, very well, thank you. Yes. Goodbye.
What did they say?
Much as expected. Lock the room, don't touch anything, keep people together, don't let anyone land. And they're sending over a senior police officer. Chief Inspector Grogan.
Will you all come on stage, please? Now, quiet. Quiet, please. Everybody. I'm afraid I have some very shocking news for you. I don't know quite how to put it. Except to say that Clarissa Lyle is dead. Now, and there's worse, I'm afraid. As Miss Gray here, her secretary, can confirm, it looks very much like murder. I've telephoned the police, and they'll be here shortly. In the meantime, they've asked that you all stay together here in the theatre. Now, Munter and his wife will bring you tea and coffee and anything else you need. Miss Gray and I still have to inform my other house guests of this appalling news.
But what about the play?
The performance is cancelled. Where do you suppose they all are?
Well, I imagine Simon is swimming. He said he was going to. Roma Lyle was in the library, but she's probably dressing by now. I imagine Ivor Whittingham is resting in his room. He's been looking none too well.
I'll see them, will you, and break the news? I'll go and find Simon. Then we'd better keep together until the police arrive. I suppose the courteous thing would be to stay with my guests in the theatre, but I'm not in the mood to face a barrage of questions.
The less they're told for the moment, the better.
Don't you mean we should keep quiet about the actual cause of death?
We don't know the actual cause of death. But, yes, I think we should say as little as possible to anyone.
But surely it's obvious her face was battered in.
That may have been done after the death. There was less blood than you'd expect.
Well, there was more than enough blood for me. You're remarkably knowledgeable about this sort of thing for a secretary companion.
I'm quite sure you've already guessed I'm no such thing. I'm a private detective. There's no point carrying on the charade any longer. And if you're going to say I've been useless, I know that too.
Oh, my dear Cordelia, what more could you have done? No one could have expected murder. Stop blaming yourself. Lugubrious self-reproach doesn't suit you.
Where is everyone? This place is like a morgue. Anyway, I'm not coming to the play. I'm damned if I'll pander any longer to Clarissa's megalomania. You all indulge her nonsense as if you're terrified of her. Someone should put a stop to Clarissa.
Someone has. She's dead. Murdered.
My God! What happened? How?
I really think that...
I insist that you tell me.
Very well. She was battered to death with that marble limb of the dead princess. I'd rather you kept the details from Simon. Her face was smashed to a pulp.
The killer took your marble? But how did he know it was there?
He, or she, took it from the display cabinet sometime early this morning, and I'm afraid that the police will take the view that whoever it was knew it was there, because yesterday, before luncheon, I myself showed it to them.
In part one of The Skull Beneath the Skin by P.D. James, dramatized by Neville Teller, Greta Scacchi played Cordelia, John Moffat, Ambrose, Norman Rodway, Whittingham, Carolyn Blakiston, Clarissa, Richard Vernon, General Ralston, Patricia Garwood, Roma, Richard Pierce, Simon, Christopher Scott, Colin, Avril Clark, Tolly, John Bull, Sir James, John Warner, Gaskin, Anna Cropper, Mrs. Munter, and Marcia King, Miss Maudsley. The pianist was Geoffrey Broad. The Skull Beneath the Skin is directed by Matthew Walters.
Do you not weep? Other sins only speak. Murder shrieks out. The element of water moistens the earth, but blood flies upwards and bedews the heavens.
Cover her face. Mine eyes dazzle. She died young.
The Skull Beneath the Skin by P.D. James, dramatized by Neville Teller, with Greta Scacchi as Cordelia Gray, John Moffat as Ambrose, Norman Rodway as Whittingham, Richard Vernon as General Ralston, Patricia Garwood as Roma, Geoffrey Whitehead as Inspector Grogan, and Richard Pierce as Simon. Part 2 of The Skull Beneath the Skin.
Thank goodness we've got the cast off the island.
I'm surprised that Grogan man let them go so easily.
Well, they could scarcely have had anything to do with it. They all arrived after Lady Ralston was dead.
And they can't complain the day's been dull, even if they've been done out of their moment in the spotlight. Clarissa's murder will be all over the county by dinner time. That means we can expect a press invasion at dawn.
What will you do?
Prevent anyone from landing. And I'll instruct Munter to refer all telephone inquiries to the police at Spaymouth. Let them cope.
More tea, anyone?
Oh, thank you, Roma.
Now, Ivo, you have all the London gossip. Tell us about this man Grogan. I confess that on first acquaintance I don't take to him.
Well, I admit I did telephone a contact from this very room, in fact, while you were busy receiving the inspector and his minions. The story is that he resigned from the Met because he was disgusted with the corruption in the CID. And that, of course, was before the latest purge. That should reassure you, Roma.
Nothing about the police reassures me.
I suppose I'd better be careful about offering him drink. It could be construed as an attempt to bribe or corrupt.
He appears to be one of nature's sea green incorruptibles.
I wonder if the chief constable, or whoever decides these things, sent him here to fail.
Why on earth should anyone do that?
Well, on the principle, better the new broom than one of your own. And he could very easily fail.
I don't know. But doesn't this have all the hallmarks of a storybook killing? A close circle of suspects, an isolated scene of crime conveniently cut off from the mainland. It should all be tied up in a week. Suspects ranked in strict order of priority. First the husband, then the heirs, family, friends, acquaintances.
As an heir and a member of the family, I hardly find that reassuring.
If the killer keeps his head clear and his mouth shut, I doubt whether he's in real danger.
No.
It isn't what the police know or suspect. It's what they can prove.
You sound as though you don't want it solved.
On the contrary, I should prefer to have it solved. It'd be tedious to spend the rest of one's life as a suspected murderer.
It'll bring in the summer tourists, though, won't it? People love blood and horror. You'll be able to show the scene of the crime. For an extra 20 pence, of course.
I don't pander to sensationalism. That's why summer visitors don't get shown the crypt. And in any case, this is a murder in poor taste.
Aren't they all?
Not necessarily. But this one strikes me as particularly bizarre, extravagant and theatrical.
In other words, entirely appropriate to its subject. Incidentally, isn't it odd that we've been left here alone? I thought there'd be at least a plainclothes underling sitting in and taking notes of all our indiscretions. Cordelia, in your capacity as a private eye, I suppose you've been co-opted and will be reporting everything back to the inspector.
I am employed by Sir George.
And the police know their limits. This is still my house and my library, and they come here by invitation. Until they decide to charge someone, we're all entitled to be treated as innocent. Even Ralston, presumably. Though, as husband, he's certain to have been elevated to chief suspect. Poor George. Selected for the first grilling.
He's been gone an inordinately long time.
Must be hell for him. Especially if he really loved her.
My guess is he stopped loving her 6 months after the wedding. He must have known by then that she was incapable of remaining faithful to anyone. If he didn't kill her, and I don't for one moment believe it was him, he's probably not entirely ungrateful to whoever did. And the money will come in useful to subsidise that fascist organisation he runs.
But don't you get some of the money, Roma, my dear? And won't it come in useful to you?
I'll be glad enough of it, I suppose, when it actually comes. But I don't need it. It certainly isn't important enough to kill for. And I damn well resent the offensive way in which we've all had our fingerprints taken. I mean, what else are they doing, apart from grilling poor George?
Collecting scientific evidence. Samples of blood, body fluids. They'll analyse the dregs of tea to find out if she was poisoned or perhaps drugged before she was killed. She was lying very peaceably on her back.
It didn't need a drug for Clarissa to lie peaceably on her back. I'm sorry. It's just that I can't really believe it. I can't picture Clarissa lying there, battered to death. She was alive. Now she's dead. I didn't like her, and she didn't like me. Death can't alter that. I'm going for a walk. I've got to get out of this place. If Grogan wants me, he can come and find me.
Yes, I suppose Ralston will get most of the money. How much is that, Ambrose?
Oh, my dear Ivo, I don't know. Clarissa never confided the details of her personal finances. We weren't that close.
I rather thought you were.
Now, that's one surprising fact about Clarissa. She loved to gossip, but she could certainly keep a secret when she wanted to. Clarissa liked hoarding, and that included nuggets of useful information.
How unexpected, and how very dangerous.
Oh, George, my dear fellow. Ah. And how did you find the legendary Grogan?
Perfectly civil. I suppose he knows his business.
I confess to some curiosity about police strategy and technique. Reviewing Agatha Christie of the Vaudeville is a poor preparation for the real thing.
Oh, it's all pretty much as you'd expect. Where was I and what was I doing this afternoon? Mm-hmm. I told them. I was bird-watching on the West Cliffs. I was also able to say I saw Simon through the binoculars on the way home. I saw him coming ashore after his swim. Grogan seemed to think that was important.
Well, what about this morning? Are we expected to detail every waking moment?
Didn't say more than I needed. Told them about our communal visit to the church, mentioned the devil's kettle and the wartime drowning, but didn't give details. No point in confusing the investigation with old history. Not their concern.
Oh, how reassuring. That's rather the line I propose taking. I'll have a word with Roma when the opportunity arises, and George, you might speak to the boy.
When I see him. Oh, sorry, I forgot. Cordelia, they want you next.
Oh, right. Where are they?
I put them in the business room.
You're saying you locked your door from the inside?
That's what I said, Chief Inspector, from the inside.
And left the key in the lock?
Yes.
Oh. I still don't see why.
It seemed the sensible thing to do. Anyway, Lady Ralston said she wanted to make quite sure for herself, after I'd gone, that the door was locked.
Sergeant Buckley, would you kindly check back and see what Miss Gray told us last time on this point?
Yes, sir. Oh, here it is. Miss Gray, I locked the door of my room leading to the corridor. Question, from the inside? Answer, yes. And what did you do with the key? I left it in the lock. Why? I wanted Lady Ralston to be able to check for herself before she locked the communicating door.
Right. Well, Miss Gray, whose idea was it? Yours or Lady Ralston's?
I honestly can't remember. What I do know is that she was extremely anxious to be left entirely alone. I let myself be persuaded.
So you went out into the corridor from Lady Ralston's room?
That's right.
And she locked herself in?
Yes.
You didn't lock the door from the outside?
Of course not. I've gone through this sequence at least 3 times, Inspector.
3 times? Sergeant Buckley?
I believe it is, sir. Hmm.
And you'd persuaded Lady Ralston to wedge a towel under the door?
That's right.
Why precisely? Again, please, Miss Gray.
To make quite sure she didn't receive another of those threatening notes, especially so close to the performance.
You'd already intercepted 2 while on the island?
That's right. Mm. 1 in the post that came over with us in the launch, and a 2nd when we were all together down in the crypt when the lights failed.
When you came back to Lady Ralston's room just over an hour later, the door was unlocked.
Yes. It surprised me. I thought she'd already got up and was dressing.
And the towel, Miss Gray? Where was the towel she was supposed to have wedged under the door?
I don't know. There wasn't a towel around.
This missing jewel box that Mr. Gorringe reported, did you notice it had gone?
Yes, I did. But in the shock of finding the body, I didn't say anything.
Mm. You say you were employed by Sir George Ralston to be with his wife?
I was employed to look after her. And I let her get killed.
Well, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Presumably you didn't think she was in any real danger, nor did her husband, nor did the Metropolitan Police, apparently.
Well, I can see why they might have been sceptical.
Really?
Yes. I wondered whether Lady Ralston had sent one of those notes herself, the one written on her husband's typewriter when he was in America.
And why should she do that?
To try to exonerate Sir George. I think she was afraid the police might think he was sending the notes. But I believe the idea backfired, and they suspected that she sent that message herself.
They did more than suspect, Miss Gray. They tested the saliva on the flap of the envelope.
Oh.
You could hardly expect them to take the death threats very seriously after that.
Oh, no.
Any other conclusions about the notes?
Well, apart from the message Lady Ralston sent herself, I thought it was possible that 2 different people were involved. I wasn't shown the 6 she received. I thought it was not unlikely that they were different in some way from the later ones, and that was why they'd been destroyed.
And who might this original correspondent have been?
I don't know.
Well, who do you suspect?
I can't say.
Can't or won't. Look, Miss Gray, let's get one thing straight, shall we? Lady Ralston was battered to death. She may not have been a good or likable woman, but she had as much right to live her life to the last natural moment as you or I or anyone.
Of course. I don't see why that needs saying.
You'd be surprised what needs saying in a murder investigation. You may be too bright for your own good, Miss Gray. You're not here to solve this crime. That's my job. Nor are you here to protect the living. Leave that to their lawyers. You're not even here to protect the dead. Do you know the saying, on doit des égards au vivant, on ne doit
mort que la vérité? Yes, of course. Voltaire. To the living we owe respect, to the dead we owe only the truth. Mm. Yes, but I was taught a different pronunciation.
I bet you were, Miss Gray, I bet you were. I taught myself with the primer. Anyway, there's no better motto for a detective. And that includes female private eyes who'd like to help the police, yet still lie abed with a clear conscience. It can't be done, Miss Gray. It can't be done.
I'll bear that in mind, Inspector Grogan.
You know, what surprises me a little is how much you noticed. How carefully when you found the body. Most people, and not only young women, would have been in a state of shock.
I know. It surprised me, too. I think what happened was that I couldn't bear to feel too much emotion. It was so horrible that it was almost unreal. I had to detach myself, so my intellect took over and made it into a kind of detective puzzle. That's why I noticed that the jewel box had disappeared, or things like the tea tray and the used cup with a smear of lipstick on the rim, or the balls of cotton wool smeared with makeup on the dressing table. It was that sort of mental tabulation that kept me from keeling over. Perhaps that's how surgeons feel. You have to keep your mind on procedures and techniques, because otherwise you might realise that what you have lying there is a human being.
It's how a policeman trains himself to behave on the scene of an accident. Or a murder.
And what exactly did your intellect deduce?
Oh, the obvious things. How odd it was that Lady Ralston had cleaned the makeup from her face, but that there was lipstick on the cup by the bedside. It looked as if she must have made up her lips again in bed before she drank her tea. Why? And I noticed that despite a good deal of blood, there wasn't as much as you'd expect from a head wound. So I thought it was just possible she was killed some other way and the injuries to her face made afterwards. And I was puzzled by the cleansing pads on her eyes. They must have been put there after her death. It wouldn't have been possible for them to stay in place while her face was being destroyed.
You're sitting on the wrong side of the desk, Miss Gray.
I take that as a compliment. There is one thing you ought to know. Sir George didn't kill his wife. When he first arrived in the bedroom and I blurted out how sorry I was, he looked at me with a kind of amazed horror. I realised that for a moment he thought I'd killed her, that I was confessing.
Let's go back to the Friday night. The time when you were with Lady Ralston in a room and she showed you the secret drawer in our jewel box. That review of the Rattigan play, are you sure that's what it really was?
Quite sure.
It wasn't a document or a letter?
And it was a local newspaper cutting. I only read the headline. I do remember thinking that the cutting was oddly shaped, much larger than the actual review.
And those threatening messages? Did your client ever give the least indication that she knew or suspected who was behind them?
Never.
And you yourself can throw no light on why and by whom she was killed?
No.
Very well. Thank you, Miss Gray. You've been helpful. Not perhaps as helpful as I'd hoped, but helpful.
I've told you everything I know.
Oh, it's early days yet. We'll be talking again. Oh. Goodbye, Miss Gray.
Allow me, Miss Gray.
Goodbye.
Well, what do you think?
Well, she's attractive. Like a cat. Self-contained and dignified.
But did she do it, Sergeant? She had time and opportunity. We've only her word that she locked her bedroom door, or that Lady Ralston locked hers. She knew where that marble arm was kept, and she had access to the business room where Gorringer's typewriter is kept, so she could have typed that final message.
I can't see Miss Gray as a murderess.
It takes an effort of the imagination, I grant you. If she did have a hand in it, my guess is that it was as Ralston's accomplice.
They're an unlikely couple. It's difficult to see what they have in common.
Politics rather than bed, I imagine. But police work teaches you that when it comes to sex, nothing is too bizarre to be ruled out.
Did you believe what she said about that look of amazed horror on Ralston's face?
No doubt he would look amazed if he thought she was confessing to a murder he'd done himself. So, we'd better find out what, if anything, the Met know about Cordelia Gray and her agency. And while we're at it, there are a whole host of other unanswered questions. What did Simon Lessing really feel about Clarissa? And how exactly did his father die?
Yeah.
Is Miss Tolgarth quite the devoted dresser-come-family retainer that we're supposed to believe? What sort of money is Sir George spending on his private militia? How much precisely is Roma Lyle going to get from the will, and how badly does she need it? And that's just for starters.
And there's certainly a choice bunch of suspects. A baronet, a distinguished theatre critic,
A best-selling novelist, a female private eye, a respectable bookseller, ex-schoolmarm, and a spotty schoolboy.
To say nothing of the butler, sir. Difficult to overlook a man as tall as that.
Thank you for reminding me, Sergeant. We mustn't forget the butler. In fact, why not let's hear what Munter has to tell us.
My duties, sir, have never been precisely defined. This is not an altogether orthodox household, but I'm in charge of all the domestic arrangements, and I supervise the two other staff, my wife and Oldfield.
And how long have you been part of this unorthodox household?
My wife and I came into Mr. Gorringe's service in July 1978, shortly after his return from 12 months spent abroad. He'd inherited the castle from his uncle the previous year.
This play, it was to be a regular event, was it? An annual drama festival, perhaps?
I'm sorry, sir. I have no means of knowing that. Mr. Gorringe didn't confide his plans to me.
Once was enough, I should think. Must have made a lot of extra work for you and your wife.
The domestic inconvenience caused by Lady Ralston alive was as nothing compared with the inconvenience of her murdered.
You found her a pleasant, likable guest, then?
She seemed a very agreeable lady.
Right. Now, let's get on with it. You know what we want. A full account of where you were, what you were doing, and who you saw between 1 o'clock, when lunch was over, and 2:45, when Miss Gray found the body.
I spent the whole of that period on the ground floor of the castle, preparing for the play and the supper party that was supposed to follow the performance. I doubt if I was out of someone's sight throughout that time. Oh, except when I remembered that Mr. Gorringe had asked me to find a different musical box for Act Three. Lady Ralston had apparently taken a dislike to the one used in rehearsal. I came into this room to fetch it from the chiffonier.
And what did you do with it?
I put it next to the other on the props table backstage. Shortly afterwards, Mr. Gorringe arrived and we checked over the props together.
How long afterwards?
Oh, it might have been 2:15.
Might have been.
I wasn't checking the time, sir.
All right. And then?
Then it was time to go to the quay to meet the launch, bringing the rest of the cast from Spaymouth. Mr. Gorringe and I showed the gentlemen to their dressing rooms, and my wife and Miss Tolgarth took care of the ladies. Then I went to the dining room to collect the chairs together for the supper party. I was there when Mr. Gorringe came to tell me of Lady Ralston's murder.
Munter. The most dreadful thing. I've just come from upstairs. Lady Ralston is dead. Murdered.
Murdered? What, in our house?
In her bedroom.
But how, sir?
I'm afraid she's been battered to death. I've just left her. Sir George and Miss Gray are still up there. Now, you must go down to the quay and prevent all those guests from landing.
Yes, sir, of course. Immediately.
I'll come down as soon as I can and explain why the performance has been cancelled.
I can see the launches from here, sir.
How far away are they?
I'd say 3/4 of a mile.
Now, then there's plenty of time for you to get down to the landing stage. We simply can't have another 80 people on the island all milling about getting in the police's way. I'm just about to telephone them.
I'll get down there right away. What shall I say, sir?
Well, you'd better tell them Lady Ralston has been killed. If they ask how, say a blow to the head. There's no need to harrow them unnecessarily.
In the event, I wasn't required to tell them anything, since Mr. Gorringe had joined me by the time the launches arrived.
A blow to the head. You've seen the body?
No, sir. Mr. Gorringe locked the bedroom.
But you've no doubt formed some opinion as to how the blow to the head was inflicted?
Well, I did wonder whether it was connected with the missing marble hand. Mr. Gorringe found the display case forced in the early hours of this morning.
But you saw and heard nothing?
No, sir. I was busy in the kitchen.
There's been murder here. Bloody murder of a defenseless woman. If there's anything you know, I expect to be told it. Clear?
Perfectly, sir. Corsi Island is used to murder, and the murderers have seldom been brought to justice. Perhaps you and your colleagues will have better luck.
You'd known Lady Ralston from childhood, sir?
Our fathers were both in the diplomatic service, but I saw little of Clarissa in recent years, until I inherited this island from my uncle. We met at a theatrical first night.
And she suggested that you might stage a play for her?
No, I really can't remember who suggested that first.
And the marble limb? That was last seen by you when?
At about 11:30 last night. Oh. When I went to the kitchen at 6:45 this morning, I found the lock forced and the hand missing.
All members of the house party had seen it and knew where it was kept?
All except Simon Lessing.
Ah, yes. The boy must have resented his father's marriage to Lady Ralston, on his mother's account, if not his own.
It was 6 years ago, and I doubt if he resented it enough to pick this moment to bash his stepmother's face in. Does Sir George know you suspect the boy?
I never said I suspected him. But I do find everyone's concerted measures to protect him interesting.
It's only natural. He was very shocked when I broke the news to him. His own parents are dead. He was devoted to Clarissa.
It strikes me, sir, that you've taken a lot of trouble for Lady Ralston, one way or another. Putting on the play for her, restoring the theatre, entertaining her guests. Must have been an expensive business.
Happily, I'm not a poor man. And since you raised the matter, the theatre was restored for my own satisfaction, not Lady Ralston's.
She wasn't hoping that you might partly finance her next professional appearance. What's the theatrical jargon? Be her angel?
That particular angelic role has never attracted me. There are more amusing ways of losing money. But if you're trying tactfully to suggest that I may have owed Clarissa a favour, you're perfectly right. It was she who gave me the idea for my bestseller. Autopsy, in case you're one of the half-dozen who haven't heard of it. No, Inspector Groven, you've been gossiping with the wrong theatrical people, I'm afraid. Not Ivo Whittingham, by any chance?
It would be accurate to say that Clarissa and I were lovers for a period of about 6 years, as opportunity and her whim dictated.
And did her husband know?
Husbands, Inspector. Our relationship outlasted more than one marital episode. But if it's George Ralston you're interested in, I never told him.
Tell me what she was like.
I was going to say you've seen her face, but of course you haven't. Pity. One needed to know the physical Clarissa to get any clue about her. She lived intensely in and through her body. The rest is a list of words. Egocentric, insecure, clever, kind or cruel as the mood took her, restless, unhappy. But she had certain skills which a gentlemanly reticence inhibits me from discussing. She probably gave more joy than she caused misery. That can't be said of many of us. I once said her the words of Thomas Malory, Lancelot speaking to Guinevere, "Lady, I take record of God. In thee I have had my earthly joy." I don't take them back, whatever she may have done.
Whatever she may have done?
A form of words, merely.
So you mourn her?
No, but I shan't forget her.
Why are you here, sir?
Here? Oh, on the island? Well, why are any of us here? Because Clarissa wanted us here. I at least was commissioned by one of the Sunday papers to do a piece on the island and the theatre, but as for the others, the boy, for instance, Simon Lessing, he didn't seem to have a notion as to why he was invited.
I think Clarissa might have wanted to show me off. My piano playing, I mean. She liked to impress people.
Are you happy living with Sir George and his wife?
Very, sir. When I'm with them. Mostly I'm at school.
It's term time now, isn't it?
Yes. I had to have special leave to come to the island.
And how did this special relationship with Lady Ralston come about?
It was after my mother died. I went to live with my uncle and his family, and that's where Clarissa came to see me in the summer of 1978 and agreed to take care of me. I wasn't adopted. Clarissa became a sort of foster mother, I suppose. She took over the whole responsibility for bringing me up.
And you welcome that arrangement?
Very much, sir. I wasn't very happy living with my uncle and aunt.
Right, then. Suppose you tell us exactly what you did between 1 and 2:45 today.
Well, I wanted to go for a swim before the play. So, after lunch, I went up to change. I put my swimming trunks on under my jeans. Clarissa had warned me not to swim too soon after the meal, so I went for a walk on the beach first for a bit.
What time did you actually go into the water?
Oh, just about 2 o'clock, I suppose. I swam for about half an hour. I came out, dried, and got dressed. I was on my way back to the castle when Mr. Gorringe saw me and came down. He told me about Clarissa.
What can you tell us about the arm of the dead princess?
Do you mean in the church? Well, there were skulls in the crypt, but...
A marble limb. Someone took it from Mr. Gollinger's display case outside this door.
I don't think I've seen it, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, of course the woodcut's mine. I brought it to Courcy because I thought Ambrose Gorringe would be interested in it. I thought it might be valuable. I hope you're not suggesting that I sent it to Clarissa, or that I'm in any way involved in those other messages.
I'm making no such suggestion, Miss Lyle.
Good.
Perhaps, though, you'd be kind enough to tell me what you did this afternoon.
Very well. I went to see Clarissa in her room just before she took her rest.
Why, exactly?
Why? To wish her good luck for the performance, of course. Why else?
I thought you had lunch with her.
So I did.
Well, why didn't you do it then?
I forgot. I realized as soon as she'd gone upstairs. I had to wish her good luck.
I see. And you left her when, exactly?
Oh, at 1:05.
And then what?
Then I went to the library. I stayed there till 2:30. And then I went up to my room to change.
Was anyone with you in the library?
No one. I was alone all the time. Oh, except that Miss Grey put her head round the door at 1:20.
What were you doing there?
What does one usually do in a library, Inspector? I was reading.
All the time?
It is possible, even in this day and age, to sit and read for 90 minutes, Inspector. But if you must know, I was also waiting for a private business call for my partner. And before you ask, no, it did not come through.
So, you sat by the telephone and read. Is that all?
For a few minutes I wrote a letter.
I see. Do you have the letter?
I decided not to send it. I tore it up.
A letter, Sergeant. The torn up fragments of a letter. Did you find them in the waste paper basket?
No, sir. Nothing like that.
No letter, Miss Lyle.
Of course not. I didn't put the pieces in the waste paper basket.
No? What did you do with them?
I took them with me to my room and flushed them down the lavatory.
Really?
Yes, really. Why not?
And you went up to your room when, exactly?
At 2:30.
Wasn't that leaving it a little late to change for the performance, Miss Lyle?
Yes, well, I decided to give the play a miss, actually. Oh, there's nothing so surprising in that, Inspector. I'd seen quite enough of Clarissa's histrionics. I simply preferred to take a walk, that's all.
What did you make of all that, Sergeant? Would you care to propound a theory to explain all those intriguing eccentricities of behaviour?
Well, let's say she was expecting a telephone call from her lover. When it didn't come, she decided to write to him. Then she thought better of it and tore up the letter. She collected the bits from the waste paper basket because she didn't want us piecing them together and reading her private correspondence.
Ingenious, Sergeant. But you see where it leaves us. At the time she tells us she took those scraps upstairs, she couldn't have known the police would be here to poke their noses into her private correspondence, not unless she also knew by then that her cousin was dead. Well, let's not read too much into it, Sergeant. It might have been the servant she was protecting herself from, not us.
I suppose so, sir.
And Miss Roma Lyle's story is not the only unconvincing one. Consider the curious reticence of the lady's maid. Sounds like the chapter heading for one of those snobbish 30s thrillers, doesn't it? You question the lady, Sergeant. She may prefer youth to experience. Give her a treat.
Of course I knew about the threats.
Who do you think was sending them, Miss Tolgar?
I don't know.
You know all Miss Lyle's friends. Haven't you any idea who it might have been?
It isn't for me to make guesses.
No, Miss Tolgar, quite right. Now, what about this afternoon? What did you do after lunch?
The normal, before a performance.
Which was?
Miss Lyle always rests for a couple of hours. She has a tray of China tea made with lemon. I prepared that in the kitchen and took it up to her.
Was anyone with her?
Sir George.
And then?
Then I tidied up the bathroom and prepared a bath.
I see.
When I went back into the bedroom, Miss Grey was there. She went into her own room to change, and while she was there, Sir George left. I went shortly afterwards. I came back at 2:45. I was worried in case Miss Grey hadn't called her.
Were you happy working for Lady Ralston?
My mother had been her nurse.
You liked each other?
We're used to each other.
Can you think of a reason, any reason, why anyone should want to kill her?
No.
All one big happy family, were you?
There's never a good reason for people to kill each other, even in happy families.
It's all over the Sunday papers, Miss Gray.
No, is it?
Mine says she was, battered to death. I can't believe it. And it's so horrible for you, Miss Gray.
Well...
Her husband, too, of course.
Yes.
Such a nice man when he called at the office. I suppose it was some kind of intruder. The paper does say her jewellery is missing. I do hope the police don't get any wrong idea.
I'm sure they won't, Miss Maudsley, but they'll be sure to check up on me and on the agency. Don't worry, just answer their questions.
Oh, dear, yes. I suppose we must. But it's all so dreadful. Am I to show them everything?
Well...
Suppose they ask to see the accounts. I did try to balance the petty cash on Friday afternoon, but it didn't quite, I'm afraid.
I don't think the police will be interested in the petty cash, Miss Maudsley. They're more likely to ask about Sir George Ralston's visit. Let them see anything they ask for, except, of course, the client's files.
Yes, Miss Gray.
They're confidential. Mm-hmm. And, Miss Maudsley, do tell Bevis to try not to be clever.
Yes, Miss Gray.
I'll ring again in a day or two. Bye.
You could cut the atmosphere in this place with a knife. I'm going for a walk. Would you care to come? I'd like to have a word with you.
All right, Miss Lyle. Inspector Grogan can always send for us if he wants us.
You're supposed to be an expert in these things. When do you suppose we can get away? I've got a shop to look after. My partner can't manage indefinitely on his own. The police can't keep us here, surely. The investigation could take months.
They can't legally hold us at all unless they arrest us. Of course, some of us will have to attend the inquest. But I should think you could leave tomorrow if you wanted to.
Did you know I'd asked Clarissa for a loan just before she was killed? And she turned me down?
Yes. I was there when she told Sir George.
Have you told the police?
No.
That was decent of you. Considering I haven't been particularly pleasant to you.
Well, if they want that kind of information, they can get it from the person concerned.
They haven't got it so far. I lied. I'm not sure why. Panic, I suppose. It's odd. I've never much liked the police, but I always took it for granted that in a crime like murder, I'd cooperate up to the hilt. I want Clarissa's murderer caught. Of course I do. So why do I feel so defensive?
I know. I feel the same.
It looks as though George hasn't told them about our quarrel either. Nor has Tolly, apparently. Clarissa sent her out while we were talking, but she could have easily heard. What do you think she has in mind? Blackmail?
No, I'm sure not. But I think she knows. She was in the bathroom while I was there, and she probably overheard. Clarissa was pretty vehement.
She was vehement with me. Vehement and offensive. If I were capable of killing her, I'd have done it then. You know, what I can't get used to is the way we all carefully avoid discussing who could have killed her.
We're stuck here together. Life will be intolerable if we start hurling accusations at each other.
Well, I don't think I can go on pretending to make polite conversation when we're all thinking about the same thing, avoiding each other's eyes, locking our doors at night. Did you lock yours?
Yes, I'm not sure why. I don't for one moment think there's a homicidal maniac on the island. Clarissa wasn't killed by mistake. She was the intended victim.
Who do you think did it?
One of us who slept in the castle on Friday night.
But who? Who? Can't be Ambrose. He never felt a strong emotion in his life. And he hasn't the ruthlessness. He does have a taste for horror. But at second hand. Disinfected by time. A tag of executioner's rope. A blood-stained nightdress. And it can't be Simon. He never even saw the marble arm. And anyway, he'd have confessed by now. He's a weakling, like his father. As for Ivo, well, I know he's dying and he may feel he's out of reach of the law. But where's his motive? Mm. I suppose George is the main suspect. But
I don't believe that either. He's a professional soldier. He wouldn't kill in that way. And certainly not a woman. Could be the Munters, I suppose. Or even Tolly. But I can't think why. That leaves you and me. It wasn't me. And if it's any comfort to you, I don't think it was you either.
Thank you.
Tell me about Clarissa. You spent a lot of your holidays with her as a child, didn't you?
Oh, God, those awful Augusts. Clarissa's mother wanted her to have young company. And my parents were glad to have me fed and boarded free. We got on quite well then, oddly enough. United by our fear of her father, I suppose. She lived in terror of him. No wonder she spent the rest of her life looking for love. But then don't we all?
I thought she adored her father, that he was an overindulgent, devoted papa.
Is that what she told you? How typical of Clarissa. He was a brute. Not physically, but that might have been more endurable than cold sarcasm and contempt. He didn't really like women. And Clarissa wasn't even pretty as a child.
I was told something about her, something she'd done, and I thought she was a monster. But perhaps no one is. Not entirely. Not when you know something about them.
She was a monster. But when I think of Uncle Roderick, I can understand why. Look, there's Grogan. He can see us from up there.
Oh, yes.
Hadn't we better be getting back? He'll suspect us of conspiracy.
Isn't that my window?
Oh, what's he doing in your room?
I'm telling that young Bobby what to do, I suppose. They're reconstructing the crime, or what they think happened to Clarissa's jewel box. Look, he's climbing down the fire escape with a box in his hands.
Why?
There you are. He's throwing it as far out to sea as he can. And there's a diver there, in that rowing boat.
So they think it was a robbery. And the empty jewel box was thrown into the sea.
Exactly. But my guess is that they'll find it still contains Clarissa's jewels. And for someone on the island, that would be very bad news indeed.
All right. So now we know from the autopsy that Lady Ralston was killed by a blow from a blunt instrument. The subsequent damage was done maybe 10 minutes later after death. So we have a murderer who sits and waits while she dies and then, what? Decides he didn't much like her and gives her a bit more.
He could have spent the time searching for something and been enraged when he didn't find it.
Searching for what? There's no sign of a search. If he was looking for something, he knew what he was about. My guess is that he found it.
I wonder what Mrs. Beaton would reject as the most inappropriate meal for this kind of occasion. A borscht followed by steak tartare.
Don't you care at all?
I don't like to think that she suffered or was in terror, even for a moment. But if you mean, do I care she's no longer alive, then no, I don't really care.
We'll have to serve ourselves, I'm afraid. I told Mrs. Munter to take the evening off and get some rest.
Oh.
Munter hasn't shown himself since lunch. Mm. If the police want to interview him again tomorrow, they'll be unlucky.
Drunk, is he? I thought he might take to the bottle.
Yes. I'm afraid this sort of thing does happen from time to time. It usually lasts 3 days. I suppose it's his release from intolerable boredom. This island isn't really congenial to him. He has an almost pathological dislike of water.
Where's Roma?
Oh, she says she has a headache. She took sandwiches to her room.
I was rather wondering about Munter.
Oh, my dear Cordelia, in what connection?
I was wondering whether he might have found a way of augmenting his income. Perhaps a little smuggling on the side.
Oh?
The Devil's Kettle would be a useful unloading point. I noticed he keeps the trapdoor bolts very well oiled.
Oh, what a little detective you are, to be sure.
And on Friday night, I saw a light flashing out to sea. I wondered if it were acknowledging a signal.
Well, of course, he is traditionally a smuggler's haven, and most sailors in these parts do a little amateur smuggling. Oh, it wouldn't amount to much, you know, a few casks of brandy, perhaps. Not that Munter is a sailor, he can't even swim.
What?
God, there's someone in the garden!
He wants to get in. He's trying to get in.
Dear heaven, it's Munter. He's gone berserk.
You!
You're drunk, man.
Murderer!
Go to bed and sleep it off.
Murderer!
I'm so sorry, George. Of course, he's not responsible. Now, come on, Munter. Come on, you're a bit past it tonight. Let me help you upstairs. Give me a hand, Simon.
Yes, of course.
Poor boy. God, she was a bitch. What?
Now, come along, old fellow. Come on. I'm so sorry, everybody. I've never known one to behave in quite such a spectacular way before. Can't imagine what's got into him.
Extraordinary fellow. Knew a chap at Sandhurst drank like that.
Well, what happened to him?
Fell into his own swimming pool and drowned. Drunk at the time, of course.
Sir George! Sir George, are you there? What's happened? There's been an accident. Or worse.
Worse? What's all the noise about?
It's a fire!
Sir George!
Cordelia, what's up?
Are we all here?
Oh, where's Simon?
I'm here.
Oh, that's all of us accounted for, then. Listen, everybody. I think...
What? What is it?
Well, I could see the pool's just below my window. There's someone in it.
In it? You mean not swimming?
Not swimming. Just down there, just below the surface, amongst the leaves.
Below the... Oh, well, someone had better... Simon, will you?
Yes, I'll go. I'll go in and see. There won't be a minute.
Come on, let's get down there.
No, it's no good, Simon. He's dead. He's probably been in the water for hours. There's no point.
Oh, my God.
But ought we to give up? I thought you were supposed to go on for ages.
Not when the pulse is gone and the body's cold.
Leave him be. He's dead. Can't you see he's dead?
Come on, Simon. You're worn out. Here, put this towel around you.
Thanks.
I'm so very sorry, Mrs. Munter. When did it happen, do you know?
How can I tell, sir? I don't sleep with him when he's drunk.
No, of course not. But you must have heard him go out.
He left his room just before 3:30.
Well, we'd better get him indoors.
Yes, but what if we to move him? Isn't it usual to leave the body till the police arrive?
But that's only in a case of murder. This is an accident. He was drunk and he fell in and was drowned. It's perfectly obvious.
I don't think it matters if we move him. It isn't as if we found him like this.
Oh, I almost forgot. There's some kind of box down there wedged among the underwater plants. I felt it when I released the body. Should I bring it up?
The jewel box?
No, I don't think so. It felt larger, and I'm pretty sure it was smooth. He must have dropped it as he fell.
Do you mind going down a second time?
I'm all right now. I won't be long. I'll soon get it.
Can't we at least cover him up?
Of course. Could you fetch something from the house?
Why, Cordelia? She's not your servant. Munter was. And you can't even bring yourself to say you're sorry he's dead. You didn't care about Clarissa, and you don't care about him. Nothing touches you. And who are you, for God's sake? Your grandfather made his money out of liver pills and gripe water.
If it's of any interest to you, I would rather see all of you, with one possible exception, dead at the bottom of my pool than lose Karl Munter.
It was caught under the netting. Here.
Thanks. Now take it.
Here, wrap yourself up.
Oh, thank you.
Good Lord. I last saw this with the other musical box on the props table. He must have been taking it back to the tower room.
But why in the middle of the night?
Well, no reason. He was drunk.
How about the other box?
And that was kept in the business room. But unless Munter returned it, I suppose it's still backstage.
Better get dressed, boy. You're shivering.
Yes. Yes, I will. I won't be long.
That boy has more talents than I gave him credit for. And how, incidentally, did he know what Clarissa's jewel box was like? I thought you only gave it to her, Ambrose, when she arrived on Friday morning.
I suppose, like you and me, he's been to her room and been shown it.
Oh, I realise that. I was just wondering when exactly...
Why not leave all that to Grogan? One amateur detective in the house is enough, surely. I'll go and telephone the police.
And I'll get back to bed. And after I've had my stint with Grogan, I'll relieve you of my presence here. Death is becoming rather infectious in your paradise.
Oh,
Then I suppose we may as well go and see if the second musical box is back in the business room where it's usually kept.
Good idea.
And by heaven it is.
What's going on?
The second musical box, it's back in the chiffonier.
That's odd. So he did return it. Well, probably couldn't rest until he'd started putting things to rights.
Except that he's changed them round. This one belongs in the tower room.
How could you possibly know that?
Because I saw it there on Friday afternoon while Clarissa was rehearsing. I went to explore the tower and found the room. I couldn't be mistaken.
Well, they look very alike.
But they play different tunes. I opened the box in the tower room, this box. It played Greensleeves. The one at the rehearsal played the Scottish melodies that Lady Ralston objected to so much.
So Munta went up to the tower and fetched this one for the performance. And that was yesterday afternoon.
And that means that somewhere around the time of the murder, he was within a few feet of Clarissa's door. Oh. He could have seen someone entering or leaving. He could have gone into her room himself. And that's why he was obsessive about returning the boxes, each to the room he said he'd taken it from. He lied to the police. But they'd only have our word for it. And it's very convenient for us, isn't it? A dead suspect. The butler did it. Even in fiction, that's usually regarded as unsatisfactory these days.
I think I can hear the police launches.
Then I'll go down to the quay and meet them.
I'll come with you. I'm curious to see Grogan's reaction to this second misadventure.
Sir George, when we were standing round Munter's body, you recognised that drowned face, didn't you?
What do you mean?
You'd never seen Munter like that before, with his face upturned. But that's exactly how you last saw his father. Wasn't it? Dead. Drowned. Blythe. Carl Blythe. The young man drowned in the Devil's Kettle by his Nazi compatriots way back in 1940.
What on earth made you think that?
Your face when you looked down at him. And the war memorial he decorates every Armistice Day. The words he shouted at you. Murderer, murderer. It wasn't Clarissa's murder he was thinking of. It was his father's. But most of all, his name. Munter. Munter's German for carefree, isn't it? Carefree. Blythe.
I didn't deliberately let them kill him.
You don't have to explain to me. It's not my business. You were a young officer at the time. You can't have been in command here.
No, but I was on duty that night. I should have discovered that something was up, but I hated Blythe so much I couldn't trust myself to go near him. He'd made my childhood hell at school. That's one thing you can't forget and never forgive. So I shut my eyes. You could call it dereliction of duty.
And Munter must have grown up believing the army had murdered his father. I wonder why he took a job on this island. Curiosity? He couldn't have expected you to turn up.
He might have hoped for it. He took the job in the summer of 1978. That's the year I married Clarissa. She's known Ambrose nearly all her life. They're both pretty much in the public eye. And I'm not exactly a nonentity.
If the police arrest you, I shall feel free to tell them everything.
No, Cordelia. It's my concern, my past, my life.
But you must see how it will look. If they believe me about the musical box, they'll know that Munter was a few feet from your wife at the time she died. If he didn't kill her himself, he could have seen the person who did. Taken with that shout of murderer directed at you, it's damning. Unless you tell them who Munter was.
No.
If they arrest the wrong person, it means the guilty one goes free. Is that what you want? To protect whoever it is?
The guilty one?
We're here together, 10 of us, on this small, lonely island, and one of us is a murderer. Come in.
Do you mind if I talk to you? There are things I must ask you.
Please, sit down.
I want you to tell me how Clarissa looked when you found her. I keep lying awake and imagining.
Didn't the police tell you, or Sir George?
No. I asked Ambrose, but he wouldn't say.
I'm afraid her face was completely destroyed.
Could you recognize her at all?
No.
The police asked if I knew anything about a marble arm. Does that mean they think it was the weapon?
Yes. It was in the display cabinet, along with a pair of handcuffs. The marble arm was found by the bed. It looked as though it had been used.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
You didn't mention your visit to the tower when you were questioned yesterday.
You didn't ask me. I didn't think it important at the time. Now those musical boxes have become significant.
There's nothing else you didn't think important?
I've answered all your questions as honestly as I can.
That's not quite the same thing, is it, Miss Gray?
Inspector, I'd like to go into Spaymouth this afternoon. I want to get off the island for a bit. Will that be all right?
Of course. But don't forget, you'll have to be in Spaymouth tomorrow at 2 for the inquest. It won't take long. We'll be asking for an adjournment. Mm. But you were the one who found Lady Ralston's body, and you were the last person to see her alive. The coroner will want you there.
Mrs. Munter? Mrs. Munter, are you there?
Come in, Miss Gray.
I didn't mean to bother you. I just wanted to see that you were all right. And I'm going into Spaymouth shortly. Is there anything I can get you?
Thank you, no. And I'll be with you in the boat, likely enough. I'm leaving, miss. I'm getting off the island.
I know how you feel, but if you're frightened, I could share a room with you tonight.
I'm not frightened. What's there to be frightened of? I'm leaving, that's all. I never liked being here, and now that he's gone, I don't have to stay.
But
Mr. Gorringe can see to the funeral arrangements. It's no concern of mine.
But you're his wife.
I never was. He wasn't the marrying kind, and nor am I. I'll be leaving in the launch as soon as Oldfield is ready.
What about tonight? Where will you stay?
She'll be staying with me.
Miss Tolgarth? I didn't see you. Mrs. Munter, I'd like a word with Miss Tolgarth in private. Do you think...
You can use this room. I have a few things to collect from around the house.
Thank you. Miss Tolgarth, you were with Clarissa when the first of the messages came during the run of Macbeth. Tell me what they looked like. You see, Miss Tolgarth, I think it was you who sent them. And I think she guessed. She knew the wrong she'd done you, but she couldn't do without you, so it was easier to pretend. And then, as she hoped, you had a change of heart. Something made you feel that what you were doing was wrong. So the messages stopped. They stopped until one of the small number of people who knew about them took over. But now they were different. They looked different, their purpose was different, and the outcome was very different. And terrible. I know I've no right to ask you, but just tell me what those first messages were like.
They were written by hand, in capital letters on lined paper. Paper torn from a child's exercise book.
And the messages?
It was always the same message. A text from the Bible.
Thank you. You've told me what I wanted to know. Miss Tolgarth, have you any idea who it was who took over?
No. I concern myself with my own sins. Let others look to theirs.
Oh!
Miss Lyle! Miss Lyle!
Wilma! Wilma! What happened? What is it, my dear?
I'm sorry.
Oh.
That was a disgusting exhibition.
Oh, never mind.
I'm glad it's you, if that's any comfort.
I'd like to help.
You can't. No one can. And you probably guessed it's the usual, commonplace, sordid little tragedy.
But what is it?
I've been chucked.
Oh, dear.
See this letter? He wrote it on Friday night. Mm. We only saw each other on Thursday. He must have known then what he was going to do.
When did this arrive?
I just got it from Oldfield. He brought the post over in the launch. Oh. Go on, read it.
Oh. If he hadn't the decency to tell you to your face, he isn't worth loving.
What's worth to do with love? Oh, God, why couldn't he have waited? He wrote a day too soon. I told him I'd get the money. I told him. Now it's too late. He was the only man who's ever wanted me. I knew why, of course. You can only deceive yourself so far. His wife doesn't much enjoy sex, and I was always available.
Oh, dear.
All right, don't look like that. I don't expect you to understand. You can get love whenever you want it.
That isn't true. Not of me, not of anyone.
Isn't it? It was true of Clarissa. She only had to look at a man. One look. That's all it ever took. All my life I've watched her using those eyes.
Oh.
But she won't anymore. Never again. Never, never, never.
Oh, dear. It's all right. It's all right now. Look, I have to go now. Roma, will you be all right?
Don't worry. I shan't do anything stupid. I can tell you what will happen to me. I'll take my share of Clarissa's money and buy myself a London flat. I'll find a part-time job and go on foreign holidays with a woman friend. We shan't much enjoy each other's company, but it'll be better than travelling alone. And every year, I shall get a little more fussy about my comforts, a little more right-wing, a little more lonely, a little more dead.
They're all arranged by years, Miss Gray. We bind 3 months together. Of course, now the Chronicle's gone tabloid, the bound volumes are much easier to manage. See, that's where the change starts, 1980.
How far back does the paper go?
Oh, the Spaybath Chronicle was founded in 1862. It's been published without a break ever since.
And still going strong?
Oh, thank heaven. Oh, we've had our ups and downs, but we're part of a group now. The owners sold out soon after the centenary celebrations. Yes, we're holding our own against the free sheets. Now, 1977, you said?
That's right. The 19th of July. It's the theatre review I want.
Oh, wasn't that about the time of the Royal Jubilee? The Queen came down here, you know. Quite an excitement.
Yes, that's the week's edition I want, Mr. Hasking.
July. Here we are. We put out a bumper edition that week. Lots of pictures. You sure there was a theatre review? I haven't come across one.
Quite sure. I've seen it.
Well, I'll go back. Oh, good grief. Oh, good heavens.
What is it?
There's a page missing. Someone's cut out a page. I can't believe it. Look, page 8, page 11. Someone's actually mutilated our official archives. Oh, vandals.
And that, Mr. Hasking, is the very page I wanted to see. Surely you've got another copy somewhere.
Oh, not here. We don't keep back numbers beyond 3 years. I haven't got the storage space. Oh, the chairman might have a complete set up in London, but I don't know. We only bind one set down here. Oh, I can't get over it.
Is there anyone you know who might have a copy of that paper? It was a pretty special edition.
I know. Miss Costello. Try her. She's kept press cuttings on the royal family for donkey's years. Oh, a wonderful collection. We sometimes use her material for background. She isn't likely to have missed the royal visit to Spaymouth.
Costello?
Lucy. Miss Lucy Costello. Uh-huh.
A dedicated monarchist. That's a somewhat old-fashioned creature these days, I suppose, though there are an awful lot of us.
Ah.
You know, I've kept a complete record of every royal occasion for years and years. And when I say royal, I don't mean just our own dear royal family. Just look at these scrapbooks. They go back 50 years, you know. I began my collection just after Daddy died. That was way back in the 1930s, well before the war. It was something to do, you understand.
Yes.
I'm 85 now.
No.
Yes, oh, I am,
really?
My dear. And now it's my main interest. Oh, I do hope it hasn't become an obsession. I shouldn't like to think that I was obsessed. It's all arranged by years, you know. Mm-hmm. 1977, you said, didn't you?
That's right.
The week the dear Queen visited the town.
Yes.
What a day that was. Of course, the Spearmouth Chronicle gave the best coverage, so I took most of my cuttings from there. And here you are. Just look at those pictures.
Ah, now that looks like it. It's the right shape, at least. Miss Costello, may I beg a favour? Just to make quite certain, would you remove that cutting from the book so I can see what's on the back? It's very important.
Of course, there's no difficulty with that. I only use ordinary stamp hinges to hold the cuttings in position. I can easily replace them. Just one moment. There we are. And on the back, Clarissa Lyle triumphs in Rattigan Revival. Is that what you wanted to see?
Yes, and no. It confirms that it's the right cutting, but this picture on the other side. Crowds waiting for the Queen. Now, what could... I see. He was there. It's him. Could you recommend a firm of local solicitors?
Well, I've heard Beswick, Turner and Harrison are considered reliable.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be wise to hurry. Little activity goes on in Spaymouth after 5 o'clock.
Oh. I need some legal advice, general legal advice. Do you offer that kind of service?
Well, it isn't usual, and I'm not sure it's altogether wise. Solicitors are rather like doctors, you know. We can't really generalise. Each case is unique. But go ahead. You don't mind if I feed the tropical fish, do you?
I want to know about tax avoidance.
Do you mean tax avoidance, which is legal, or tax evasion, which isn't? Oh, look at him. Isn't he a beauty? That's the Dawn Tetra, an expensive little fellow from British Guiana.
He's very beautiful, but I don't much enjoy tropical fish in tanks. And it's tax avoidance I'm interested in. Suppose I came into a very large sum of money, all in one tax year.
Is it the fish or the tanks you object to, or perhaps both? They're perfectly happy, I assure you. Their small world has been scientifically devised for their comfort, unlike ours. Now then, this large sum of money, you're not contemplating a bank raid, are you?
I mean earned income. Money from a successful play or novel, for example.
Well, if you were sensible, you would arrange your contract so that you didn't receive it all during the one financial year.
But suppose I didn't expect it to be so successful.
Then you could avoid paying tax on it by becoming non-resident for the whole of the subsequent financial year. You see, those sort of earnings are taxed retrospectively.
Could I come home for a holiday or weekend?
Not even for a day. If you as much as step foot on UK soil during those 12 months, you'd become liable for tax on all your earnings in the preceding year.
And if I made a quick visit and concealed it from the Inland Revenue?
Then you would be prosecuted for attempted fraud.
Ah. And what would the tax be?
Well, the present top rate on earned income is 60%.
What was it in 1977?
Ah, in those unregenerate days it was rather more. 80% or more on an income of over £24,000.
So I could be ruined?
Bankrupt, you mean? Indeed you could. If you'd been so ill-advised as to spend all your previous year's income in advance, on the assumption you'd avoided the tax. I hope you're not in that precarious situation.
Hello? If you're setting out fishing, could you land me on Corsi Island? I'm staying there and the launch hasn't come back for me for some reason. It's terribly important that I get there.
They say a woman's been murdered there.
Yes, that's right.
Murdered woman. Nothing new for Corsi Island. I'll be fishing off the southeast point. I'll take you, if you're sure you want to go.
Oh, I'm quite sure. Thank you very much.
Good evening, Cordelia. Have you eaten?
Where is everyone?
Ivor's in bed, not at all well, I'm afraid. He's hoping to go home tomorrow. Roma left mid-afternoon with Sir George. Simon's gone to bed, not hungry.
Why didn't Oldfield meet me at Spaymouth with the launch?
Oh, he or I must have misunderstood. He won't be back till morning. To all intents and purposes. We are alone.
Do you know why I went to Spaymouth this afternoon? I went to find this cutting from the local paper.
Hmm. Yes, I did wonder. Congratulations. I didn't think you'd succeed.
Because you'd already cut it out of the newspaper archives yourself.
Precisely. I destroyed it about a year ago. It seemed a sensible precaution.
I found another.
So I see. Oh, you look tired, Cordelia. Would you like some of this claret or...
All right.
A brandy?
A claret, please.
I came back to the UK to visit my uncle. I was his heir, and he wanted to see me before he died. He was very ill. He didn't understand about tax-free years. He asked me to come, and so I came.
And if you hadn't, perhaps he would have altered his will.
Oh, unkind Cordelia. No, I genuinely liked him, and I valued him. He was his own man, like some ancient chieftain. Even then there was no danger. Then when he was clearly dying, he asked me to get him something he fancied. A last taste of blue Stilton. He could have asked his housekeeper, but he didn't. He asked me.
So that's why you went to Spaymouth?
That's why. If I hadn't done that simple act of filial kindness, Clarissa wouldn't have seen that press photograph, wouldn't have forced me into staging the Duchess of Malfi, would still be alive. Odd, isn't it? We live by chance and we die by chance. With Clarissa, it was a matter of 8 ounces of blue Stilton.
Chance? But it was you who smashed her face in, and not once, but time and time again. How could you make yourself do that?
Wasn't agreeable. And if it's any consolation to you, I had to close my eyes. When I opened them, Clarissa wasn't there. Once her face was gone, I couldn't even remember what she looked like. Clarissa was her face. And, you know, looking at her, I knew what I'd always known. The presumption that she or anyone has a soul is ridiculous. This life is all we have. We die as animals. We go into the night without hope.
Millions of people share that belief, yet they still live good, kindly, and useful lives.
Mm. Because goodness, kindness, and usefulness are expedient. It's necessary for comfort to be at least a little light. When I was 16 and first came to this island, I knew for the first time what I wanted of life. Not power, or success, or sex, with men or women. I wanted a place. This place. This view. This sea. This island. It's the only real passion I've ever known. And I wasn't going to let a nymphomaniac second-rate actress take it from me.
And so you killed her.
Oh, my dear Cordelia. Of course I didn't kill her. But do you really believe you're sitting here sipping Chateau Marco with a murderer? Oh, I congratulate you on your sang-froid.
But if you...
I couldn't kill anyone. I thought you understood that. I haven't that brand of ruthlessness. Oh, no, she was dead when I battered her face in. Someone had been there before me.
Someone?
There was no upward spurt of blood. How could that be? All I did was to cover up for the murderer. Admittedly, it was mainly self-interest. I had to find and destroy that vital scrap of newsprint. But you should credit me with some disinterested concern for the killer. It pleased me to concoct a way of escape for him, if he had the guts to take it. After all, I did owe him something. I knew the cutting would be somewhere in the room. One of her little tricks was to keep it near her and to take it out of her handbag occasionally. I couldn't risk the police finding it. They'd be looking for a motive. It's never safe to rely absolutely on the stupidity of the police.
So it was Simon.
Oh, poor Simon. Where is he now?
In his room. Perfectly safe, I assure you. Do you want to know what happened?
But he couldn't have planned it. Not Simon.
Planned it? No. But she's just as dead, isn't she? He told me she asked him to go to her room. He was to tell everyone he was going for a swim, but he was to wait for half an hour after she'd gone up to rest, then knock three times at the door. He, poor deluded fool, thought she was going to tell him he could go to the Royal College, that she'd pay for his musical education.
But why did she want to see Simon?
Oh, we'll never know, but I can guess. Clarissa liked to make love before a performance. Yeah, perhaps it gave her confidence.
But Simon, that boy, she couldn't have wanted him.
Oh, she may have thought she was doing him a service in more ways than one. Clarissa was totally incapable of believing that any normal man existed who wouldn't take her if he could get her. And who else was there? George, I'm sure, hadn't touched her since he discovered he's a cuckold. Ivo's had his turn. And I'm no use to her.
But it's horrible.
Oh, only because you're young, pretty and intolerant. A different boy at a different time might even have thanked her. But Simon Lessing's a romantic. What she saw in his face wasn't desire. It was disgust.
What happened? How did you find out?
I changed much quicker than I told Grogan. I was actually leaving my room just after 2:40. At that moment, Simon came out of Clarissa's door. It was complete chance. We stared at each other. His face was ghastly. I thought he was going to collapse. I pushed him back into the bedroom and locked the door. He was wearing only his swimming trunks, and I saw his shirt and jeans in a heap on the floor, and Clarissa was lying sprawled on the bed. He'd brought the jewel box crashing down on her skull.
But why? Did he say why?
Oh, not very coherently. But neither of them had got what they wanted. Clarissa had taunted him with his sexual failure. She told him he was as useless to her as his father. And I think that was the moment. When she lay there, half naked on the bed, smiling at him, mocking him and his dead father together, destroying all his hopes. That was the moment that his control snapped. He seized the jewel box, the only weapon to hand, and brought it down.
And after that?
I told him precisely what he must do. I schooled him in his story to the police. I took him into Clarissa's bathroom and washed off the small spot of blood. Then I found the newspaper cutting. It didn't take long. Her handbag or the jewel box were the two obvious places. Mm. Then I took him to the fire escape outside your bedroom window and told him what to do. He went down, carrying the box under his arm, and hurled it out to sea.
But someone else was watching, weren't they?
Mm.
Munter had gone to the tower room for the musical box, and the tower room's window is the only one which overlooks the fire escape.
I know. He let it slip on Saturday night when Simon and I were helping him to his room, but it wouldn't have made any difference. Munter was absolutely safe. He would have taken any secret of mine to the grave.
He did take it to the grave, and conveniently early.
Yes, well, I didn't kill him, if that's what you're implying, nor, as far as I know, did Simon. That death, at least, was accidental.
What did you do next?
I had to work quickly. I cleaned the makeup from Clarissa's face so that the police wouldn't suspect she'd invited a visitor to her room. Then I set out to destroy the evidence of how she was killed and substitute a weapon Simon couldn't have brought because he didn't know it existed. Oh, I already had the marble arm and the note ready, as it happened. I was intending to put them in the casket that Clarissa would open in Act Three. Oh, I assure you, the result would have been spectacular. I doubt if she'd have got through the scene.
You sent all those threatening quotations. You took over when Tolly stopped.
Oh, so you know about Tolly. Oh, I think I've underestimated you, Cordelia. Yes, I wanted to get back my privacy, my peaceable island. She would never return to Courcy if its theatre was the scene of her final humiliation. To do her justice, she wasn't a common blackmailer. She first saw that newspaper cutting in 1977. She hugged it to herself for 3 years before she needed to make use of it. It was bad luck that the restoration of my theatre and the crisis in her career coincided. Suddenly there was something she wanted of me, and she had the means to get it.
And Simon conveniently provided a permanent solution to your problem.
Oh, I hope it's a solution. You know, it's not going to be possible to shield him for much longer. He's beginning to drink. You must have seen it. And he's making mistakes.
That gaff which Roma noticed, for example. How could he have known what the jewel box was like if he hadn't seen or handled it? And there would have been others. I liked the boy, but I was wrong about him. He hadn't the guts to see this through.
Would have been. You liked the boy. Where is he? Where is Simon?
I told you. In his room, as far as I know.
No, he's not. Where is he? Oh, dear God, what have you done? Simon? 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 Simon! Simon! Simon? Simon! Simon! Simon!
Down here!
Simon, what's happened?
Ambrose told me I'd be in prison for the rest of my life. Little Broadmoor. I can't face that. I came to the Devil's Kettle. This is the best thing.
Where's the key to those handcuffs? What have you done with the key?
I chained myself to the top rung of the ladder and dropped it. I heard it hit the water. That was half an hour ago. The water wasn't even over my ankles. Leave me alone, Cordelia. This is the best way. Leave me alone.
There's not much time. We have about another 5 minutes at the most. Watch out. I'm coming down.
I can't stand it, Cordelia. Prison. Broadmoor. I can't stand it.
You lied, Simon. Ambrose lied. Manslaughter isn't murder. You didn't mean to kill her, and you aren't mad.
Cold. The water's icy. Oh.
Show me, Simon. Exactly where did you drop that key? Show me!
About here. I held out my right hand like this.
Right.
Then I let it fall.
You hold on. And wish me luck.
We go into the night, Cordelia. No reward. No punishment. No afterlife. Nothing but darkness. And we go without hope.
Got it. Keep your head high.
I'm not worth it. I was there when Malta fell in. I could have saved him. I ran away. I pretended I hadn't seen. I'm not worth it, Cordelia.
Don't think about that now. We've got to get you out of here. Now, if I can reach your hand... There. Now then.
I'm so sorry, Cordelia.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Please, God, no. Open the trap door. Open it.
This is it. We're done for, aren't we?
Perhaps. But there's still a chance. We can swim for it. Come on, Simon. While there's still air enough. Now you go first. I'll be behind you. Ready? Now!
O Lord, methought what pain it was to drown. What dreadful noise of waters in mine ears. What ugly sights of death within mine eyes.
Oh, take it easy, girl. Oh, lucky for you, I was still here.
You saved my life.
Oh, saved you a bit of a swim, that's all. You'd have made it.
There are two of us. There's a boy with me. We've got to find him.
Hmm? Well, no sign of anyone else.
Why be here somewhere? He's a strong swimmer.
All right, I'll try. Well, you go into the cabin and get warm.
Are you sure that the trapdoor was bolted? Did you try to lift it?
At first, but I knew it was no good. I heard the bolt shoot home.
You were frightened and cold. It might have fallen accidentally.
It didn't.
You understand the importance of what you're saying?
Of course.
We'll need to take you back there.
I missed you last night. The police tell me they found a hotel for you on the mainland. I hope it was comfortable.
Comfortable enough. I can't remember much about it.
You've told them everything, of course?
Of course.
I can almost smell their exhilaration. The case very nearly wrapped up. At the moment, I imagine they're still testing the trap door, trying to decide whether it could have crashed down accidentally, whether you really could have heard the bolts shoot home. Now, after all, when they returned here last night, in a state, I might say, of some excitement, they found the trap door closed, but not bolted. And I don't think they'll get any identifiable prints from the bolts, do you?
You killed Simon, and you tried to kill me. Me? My life counted for less than your comfort, your possessions, your private world.
But it isn't true. No one tried to kill you, Cordelia. No one shot back those bolts. When you climbed down to Simon, you didn't prop it up completely. It fell. You were terrified, cold and exhausted. You hadn't the strength to shift it.
And what about the motive? The photograph in the Chronicle?
What photograph? Well, don't tell me you haven't discovered that it's missing from your shoulder bag.
The woman I borrowed it from will remember. She'll tell the police.
And even if they manage to locate another copy, which is doubtful, what will one 10-year-old smudged newspaper photo prove? Simon Lessing is dead. He killed himself after killing Clarissa. He confessed that to me before he disappeared. He fractured her skull, and he beat her face to a pulp in his hatred and disgust. Last night, unable to face what he'd done, he tried to kill himself. Despite your heroic attempt to save him, he succeeded. That is my story, and nothing you choose to fabricate can disprove it. I won't yield an inch. Now or later.
I suppose if you opt out long enough from human concerns, from human life with all its messiness, you opt out also from human pity.
Your visit to Courcy Island was not as happy as I would have hoped. I wish it could have been otherwise. I'm sorry, Cordelia. Truly sorry. Please forgive me.
Miss Gray, I do hope it's all right calling you. I wondered when you'll be coming home. There's a new case. It's terribly urgent. A lost Siamese kitten. It belongs to a child just out of hospital. She's only had it a week. She's dreadfully distressed. And Mrs. Sutcliffe's just rung. Her Pekingese, Nanky Poo, is lost again. She wants someone to go round at once.
Lock up and start looking for the kitten. Ring Mrs. Sutcliffe and tell her I'll call round this evening about Nanky Poo. I'm catching the afternoon train after the inquest. Bye.
Back to your lost kittens, Miss Gray. A bit of a come down.
Oh, I don't know. Animals don't burden you with their psychological problems, nor surround themselves with possessions, nor scream with pain at the loss of love. They don't expect you to die for them, Chief Inspector, and they don't try to murder you.
In The Skull Beneath the Skin by P.D. James, dramatized by Neville Teller, Greta Scacchi played Cordelia, John Moffat, Ambrose, Norman Rodway, Whittingham, Richard Vernon, General Ralston, Patricia Garwood, Roma, Richard Pierce, Simon, Geoffrey Whitehead, Inspector Grogan, Avril Clark, Tolly, Richard Tate, Munta. Anna Cropper, Mrs. Munta. David Googe, Sergeant Buckley. Brian Miller, Bezick. John Warner, Hasking. Joan Matheson, Lucy Costello. And Marcia King, Miss Maudsley. The Skull Beneath the Skin was directed by Matthew Walters.